Now, they'd never leave the UK, but some 60% of British millionaires believe they could have a better life abroad should the Chancellor go easy on wealth taxes to keep them here. And... The government's asylum policy ripped up as the High Court forces the closure of an asylum hotel in Epping, opening the door to more councils to bring legal action. Ministers worry that there will now be more violence around hotels in order to bring about a decision to close them. Do you think that's likely?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the government is braced for more legal action over asylum hotels after a council in Essex secured a temporary High Court injunction. Epping Forest District Council argued public safety was being put at risk because of ongoing protest outside the Bell. It now has until September the 12th to stop housing migrants following weeks of disruption. Speaking after the ruling, the Conservative leader of Epping Council, Chris Whitbread, welcomed the decision.
They need to address the issue at the borders, obviously, and obviously this is our country's always been a fair country, and we've always welcomed legitimate asylum seekers, but this is wrong. What's going on is currently wrong, and the government needs to get a grip.
The Home Office has stressed the injunction was won on planning laws, not public order issues. Reform UK says all 12 of its local authorities are now considering legal action. NATO leaders will hold a virtual summit later to discuss security arrangements for Ukraine in the event of a peace deal with Russia. President Trump has said his Russian and Ukrainian counterparts are still preparing to meet, despite the Kremlin distancing itself from that suggestion. The largest global review on vaping in young people has found children who do it are more likely to become smokers. Research shows children who vape are three times more likely to take up tobacco. Experts have also linked vaping with a greater likelihood of developing health issues, including asthma and bronchitis. The civil service is to develop a new apprenticeship scheme in an effort to employ more people from working class backgrounds into government. LBC understands 50 roles will be available in Birmingham and Manchester to try and move jobs outside of London and the South East. And Mo Salah has won a record third PFA Men's Player of the Year award. The Egypt international scored 29 goals to help Liverpool win the Premier League title last season. Arsenal's Mariona Caldenzi took the women's prize after helping the club win the Women's Champions League. Former England manager Sir Gareth Southgate has told LBC it was a real honour to win the Merit Award for his contribution to the game.
It's lovely to be recognised by the players because, you know, especially when you've coached, the thoughts and feelings of the players are really important. So, and the PFA is a very important organisation, always has been and continues to be today.
In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 91.89. It closed up 31 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, sunny spells for most today, cloudy across central and eastern areas, feeling cooler, highs of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
At This Vet, Mia's the owner, surgeon, rota manager and puppy wrangler. And now she and her team are cybersecurity experts too.
Mia, someone tried accessing our system. Phishing scam. I blocked it.
BT Security Awareness Training turns your team into your first line of defence. Quick to set up from just £1.25 per user per month. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Thankfully, not just Mia's. Search BT Business Cybersecurity. T&Cs apply. Prices exclude VAT at 20%. 12-month minimum term applies.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 3 minutes past seven the time. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast here on LBC. Hope we find you very well this Wednesday morning. Coming up...
I think anyone who believes in those traditional British values of the freedom of speech and the right to peaceful protest should be worried about that.
The leader of the Lib Dems there calling for a review of terrorism laws after the proscription of Palestine Action and the arrest of hundreds of its supporters. The security minister says this group is violent and dangerous. A majority of Labour supporters disagree with him. We'll have a word. Also,
There's no way William and the family will move in there. It will still be Monarchy HQ, but now Charles has already started opening up more to the public. That will definitely continue.
As Prince William and Kate set up their forever home in Windsor, the future of Buckingham Palace is being called into question. Apparently the royals never liked it anyway. What should be done with it? And
are you pale, male, or even stale? Well, the civil service is not the place for you. Today they're launching their own apprenticeship scheme, trying to get more working class Brits into the heart of government. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the exclusive details.
Plus, dancing banned for police officers at this year's Notting Hill Carnival. The Met says as facial recognition technology is brought in to ward off violence. Is this event safe?
Call 0345 60 60973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Very good morning to you. This hour,
save our kids! Save our kids! Save our kids!
It seems as if those protesters outside the Bell Hotel in Epping have won. Yesterday, dramatically at the High Court, Epping Forest Council won the right to close the hotel to asylum seekers, a decision that throws the government's asylum hotel policy into some degree of chaos and, say, the Home Office risks more violence. Here's how some of those protesters in Epping reacted.
I haven't stopped smiling, really, because, as I said, for 5 years this hotel's blighted us.
Where does it go from here? Where does it go from here? That's the big question.
The asylum system is broken, and if you have a migrant hotel, you should go out and protest it.
I don't like it on my doorstep, but in fairness, you've got to live somewhere.
It's not fit for our community. We don't want it, and our community's in danger. We don't want these people there.
The decision at the High Court seems to be based on a number of factors. The fear of local residents about criminality, but primarily, it seems to be the fact that these hotels have not followed planning laws to change the nature of their business from being a hotel open to members of the public who would pay for it to something else. The judge saying that, therefore, the owners of this hotel avoided the public scrutiny that would have come with a change in those planning laws, avoided that public scrutiny about what they were up to. They've now been given 24 days to shut the hotel to those asylum seekers. Is this a decision you celebrate? Chris Whitbread is the leader of Epping Forest District Council, who led that High Court bid to block asylum seekers from being housed at the Bell Hotel. Thank you for coming on the programme, Mr. Whitbread. Is this a decision that you celebrate?
Thank you. I never used the word celebrate. It's a decision that's the right decision, and I'm pleased for the people of Epping. As a council, we always said the Bell was not suitable for this purpose because it's in close proximity to five local schools, residential properties, and to a residential care home. It just wasn't the right location.
The case seemed to hinge on the use of planning laws or the lack of changing of those planning laws to allow that hotel to become available for asylum seekers. Does this then mean that any hotel that doesn't do that, even in the area of Epping, will fall foul to a similar High Court ruling?
I think it will be down to each individual council to assess on planning rules, and that's what we did.
Do you understand the government's concern that this might open the door to every council now taking these hotels to court, or at least the government to court, for their role in it?
I accept their concerns, but I think they should have a better plan, and they should have a plan B in place for this eventuality.
Plan B would be houses of multiple occupancy. So you could
Not necessarily. Sorry, I interrupted.
That's all right, sir. We're going to have to put them somewhere. If it's not a hotel in Epping, it might be HMOs in Epping. Would you take that to court as well?
I don't think that would be a good decision by the government. I don't know why the government isn't looking at pop-up processing centres along the lines of what was done during the pandemic with the pop-up hospitals. There are other ways of dealing with this. And one of the interesting things that came up yesterday in court from our representative was perhaps they could use Crown Estates land in order to do that type of arrangement. There are other ways the government can deal with the processing problem.
What would that look like potentially then, Chris? Crown Estate land? How would that be used?
Well, that's down to the government, but I've just given a suggestion there.
The government property, state land in effect, would be used as a place to house securely people who would come over on boats?
Exactly.
Do you worry that there's going to be then more violence, more protests, outside the hotels, whether they're in Epping or other places, as part of a way of bringing court cases?
As I've done from day one, as when this all started back in July, I've called for calm and peaceful protest if there has to be protest. Unfortunately, at the very beginning of this issue we've had in Epping, there were some violent protests caused by extremes from both sides of the political equation, which was really worrying and really upsetting. I have to say to you, the people of Epping, most of them, have dealt quietly with their concerns, have come to us quietly and said, look, we don't believe the Bell is the right place. We think it should be shut. But they've just gone on with their lives. Unfortunately, the disruption of any form of protest has affected the town.
So any attempt to house the asylum seekers that are going to be moved from the Bell Hotel in either any other hotel in Epping or in HMOs, you would seek to challenge, Chris?
I would not, rather that the government consult with us about what they're planning, because the trouble is, with the whole Bell issue, is the government have failed to consult with us. The previous government did, and they did listen to our concerns. So, for instance, during the pandemic, it was used to house families, young children and families, not single men. The government this time acted without proper consultation. They instructed us what they were doing, and they didn't think about the local community, and they didn't listen to our concerns. That's why this went so badly wrong for the government. And it's a government that doesn't listen. I've tried to speak to the Home Office officials. They didn't want to listen. All you get is the stock reply. We will try to end using hotels by the end of this parliament. 4 years is too long in a small town like Epping.
Very good to talk to you. Thank you for coming on the programme. Chris Whitbread is the leader of Epping Forest District Council, leading that High Court bid to block asylum seekers from being housed in that hotel. Kay Marsh is listening to that, Community Engagement and Migrant Support Coordinator at the Samfire Project, a campaign group based in Dover. Thank you for coming on, Kay. Your reaction to that ruling?
Well, it's worrying, isn't it? I mean, you know, if not hotels, then where? The use of hotels has never been ideal, of course. And, you know, I think everybody would like to see the end of the use of hotels. But if not hotels, then where? You know, we've got Napier Barracks is a mass accommodation camp down here in Kent. That's due to close as well. There doesn't seem to be a plan B. There doesn't seem to be any sort of firm where these people are going to go when these places close.
Do you understand and accept the reasons why people in Epping protested at the use of this hotel, particularly with the type of people that were being housed in it?
I think that, you know, certain individuals cause issues, but it's not representative of the majority of these people. Most people just want to live a quiet life and, you know, make it through the asylum system. I think another worrying aspect of this is, of course, that violent protest did bring this about. And by this ruling, I think other violent protesters might feel emboldened to do the same thing around the country.
Would you be comfortable, happy, to live next to or to have next to you a hotel housing asylum seekers, mainly young men?
I've voluntarily gone into Napier Barracks and worked there and worked with the people there. So, and you know, I've met hundreds of these people. And as I say, the majority are just normal people that want a nice, quiet life. So, I would feel safe.
So what is it that people, in your mind, don't understand or fail to see or are told falsely about the people inside those hotels that leads them to either protest violently or to protest peacefully?
The issue has always been the miscommunication and the use of isolated incidents. You know, there's bad people in every community, you know, bad things happen, but it's not representative of all of the people within that community.
No.
So, it's always been an
but
issue.
That being said, I agree with you on that, of course. That being said, part of the issue with this is that the government don't seem to be consulting with local residents or even, in this case, the local council to say that this is happening. It just happens without explanation. That's not reasonable.
No, I absolutely agree. You know, we've had similar issues down here, again, with Napier Barracks when it first opened. You know, even support organisations like Samfire weren't made aware. So it's not just, you know, people on the anti side, it's also people on the pro side that aren't being consulted. And that does lead to community tensions. And it you know, people don't feel like they're being heard.
Do you think then the most reasonable way of solving this, or at least trying to deal with this, is to find a form of accommodation, whatever that may be, that means that people who arrive in it are kept in it
and don't have the freedom to walk into a town or walk into to wherever?
I think the danger of that becomes, you know, we are then essentially detaining people that haven't really done anything wrong. We do have detention centres. But, you know, if somebody is innocent and hasn't committed a crime, should they be detained and locked up in such a way? Or is that, you know, a breach of human rights? It's certainly a very complex issue. And there doesn't seem to be a suitable plan B.
Thank you very much indeed for your time. Kay Marsh, Community Engagement and Migrant Support Coordinator at the Samphire Project Campaign Group based in Dover. This is opening the floodgates, folks. This is just the beginning. Wait until various councils, particularly I'd have thought in Kent, where the boats do arrive, now a reform-led council that have said for some time that they want to find ways of stopping these hotels from popping up. This is just the beginning. The government have got a hell of a problem on their hands. It is going to be up to, I would have thought, some of those hotels to change their planning rules to whatever technical bit of jiggery-pokery that means that they can legitimately house asylum seekers if that's what they want to do, but that opens them up to a lot of public scrutiny. And that, I think, is really part of the problem with this, and has always been part of the problem with this. It is a form of insanity for the government not to tell local councils or local people where these asylum seekers are going to be placed. And then when the local council does get in touch and say, hello, might have a bit of an issue here, or can you help us with this, that stock answer, no, go away, we'll close it in 4 years. It is unacceptable. You can't do that to people who might be worried about who is inside those hotels and what they're getting up to. So if it's not a hotel, it's going to have to be a house of multiple occupancy. That is going to come with all kinds of difficulties too. Or you have to put people on various forms of state-owned property, Crown estate land, or whatever, and you have to make sure that they don't have the ability to wander off into a town if there are concerns about safety. That's not unreasonable, is it? 03456060973. Is this a judgment that you celebrate? Is it one that you worry about, given this is a real tugging at the thread of the government's very, very central plank of their asylum policy, or what is left of their asylum policy, given the difficulties in that system? If you can't use a hotel, and the government isn't saying about where people are being housed, like they weren't in Portsmouth, there's a house around the corner from you that might see 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 people put into it as a house for multiple occupancy. Is that better? Get into the details in just a few moments. Coming up,
inflation has risen again, and by more than had been expected by economists. That's a headache for the Chancellor and the Bank of England. I'm Christian May from City AM. I'll be discussing this and some other business stories with Tom shortly.
The good news just keeps coming. 7:17 news headlines on LBC. Dominic Ellis.
Councils in England are preparing legal action to try and stop hotels in their areas housing asylum seekers. Figures just released show inflation unexpectedly rose to 3.8% in July, up from 3.6% in June. And NATO leaders are expected to hold a virtual summit later to discuss security arrangements for Ukraine. LBC weather, cloudy across central and eastern areas, some sunny spells and patchy cloud elsewhere, highs of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A2's back open now westbound at the Bean Interchange, but there are still lengthy delays from the tollgate services, and also delays continue on the M20 westbound to Junction 4 at Leybourne. It's because a van broke down earlier, but that's also been recovered. In Crayford, Thames Road stays closed eastbound at Perry Street for the emergency works. That's causing queues. In Chislehurst, Central Common Road is closed both ways after an accident. Queues on the North Circular Road westbound to the Kenning Hall interchange. A car has broken down. And on the train, Southwestern Railway services are delayed between Clapham Junction and Feltham. And on the Underground, the Metropolitan Line remains suspended between Chalfont and Latimer and Chesham. And then there are severe delays between Rickmansworth and Amersham.
This is LBC.
Build your own package with TUI. Let's go. City break or a beach escape. Lovely. Fly from your local airport.
Taxi's here.
Handy. Any day of the week. Ideal. On a TUI flight or a partner airline.
This is your captain speaking.
Nice. How many nights? 3, 5, 14? Perfect. More options, more choice. All wrapped up with a TUI smile. TUI. Live happy. Atoll and Avta protected. Booking T's and C's apply.
This is LBC.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend.
That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix.
You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
4. That's Stranger Things, Mom.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV, plus change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Tesco finest Sugar Bell tomatoes, the ultimate supporting act. Zinging up salads or elevating fresh linguine. Perfect for when you want to be vined and dined. It's why only the finest varieties are hand-picked when perfectly ripe to ensure our Sugar Bell tomatoes are exceptionally sweet. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco finest. Majority of larger stores.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
20 past 7 the time. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at Breakfast here on LBC. Hope we find you well this morning. You heard just before the news then, and in the news, I hope that the inflation rate has gone up from 3.6 to 3.8% in the last month. The Bank of England talked about it getting to potentially 4% around September. There's a bit of a problem too happening in the gilt markets. The cost of government debt is going up and up and up and up at the moment. Massive headaches for the Chancellor. We'll get into the details of that with Christian May from City AM in a few moments. Come to a change in who is going to make up the civil service, who at this stage in the Treasury are tearing their hair out about the state of the economy. We'll get into the details of that exclusive with Natasha Clark in a few moments. But it is to the events in Epping that we turn. The High Court judgment that sees 28 days given in order to remove the people in the asylum hotel because the High Court say it can no longer be used for that purpose. Is this a ruling that you celebrate? Steve's in Guildford. Steve!
Morning, Tom. Now, this is a government-created problem due to poor planning. The boat's come since 2014, and we have got not one, asylum-seeking reception centre where you could have a staggered asylum claims, go through stage one, stage two. There's a lot of people who say they've got family connections. They get to stage three, then it might not have got their claim yet, but the family could sponsor them. They could go to live with that family or get sponsored jobs. Normal asylum seekers could have stayed in there. They get to stage two, right, you can go to work. You apply for jobs whilst in the reception centre and go to work. And when you do get dispersed into communities, you're not dispersed in the hundreds, you go in the tens. Now, the fact we haven't got one reception centre built, it's an absolute scandal for this country.
Well, we definitely used to have detention centres. Immigration detention centres. Yeah, OK. Well, immigration detention centres did exist. The problem is, Steve, I suspect part of the problem with this is the numbers are just so vast that it completely floods any accommodation that might exist to hold people or process people or register people or, indeed, welcome people.
Yeah, but if this is been up since 2014. If you built these centres in 2014, 15, 16 and 17, the processing would have been so quick, then there would be no backlog because the actual asylum...
Yep, quite possibly, but that, Steve, is dealing with the world as we wish it to be rather than the world as it is. And the world as it is at the moment is we had 50,000 people come just in these 6 months or in the last 8 months. 50,000! Yeah.
Because it's been created, because they know what they're coming to. And if they were coming to a reception centre in 2014. In 2024, 25, they will be coming in at 50,000.
Do you think that this is going to see more hotels forced to close?
No, the government will appeal it and it'll just go back to normal.
That this will go to another, knock it up to the Court of Appeal and get this overturned?
The government can't afford to have all the hotels turned out in a couple of weeks. It's just ridiculous to think this is going to happen. But the government will pull itself together and they will go to the Supreme Court and it'll be overturned.
All right. Let's wait and see, Steve. Thank you very much indeed. Rudy, I'll come to your call in just a few moments. 7:24 the time. Next.
You all right, geezer? Let's go, mate. You all right, yeah? Popping down that local for a couple of beers, are we? All right, sound, mate. Yeah, see you there. Cheers.
That might be the new Secretary of State for Work and Pensions soon. The civil service will launch a new apprenticeship programme today in a bid to hire more working class Brits to the heart of government. Cabinet Office Chief Pat McFadden is going to fire the starting gun on a new scheme to stop government being, and I'm quoting here, flooded with posh Oxbridge graduates in London. Yeah. Natasha Clark is LBC's political editor with the exclusive. Natasha.
Tom, I don't know any of those, do you?
No, I don't. Very good people.
Exactly. Yeah. We don't want you. Pale, male and stale, like you. We don't want you in the civil service. We found out a few months ago the government was going to launch its own apprenticeship scheme. Today, we can exclusively reveal the details to you, Tom. There'll be 50 spots across Birmingham and Manchester. They want to try to move some of those working in London outside of London. And who do they want to apply? Working class school leavers aged 16 and over, actively encouraging people who have not been to a university to come on in. It opens today, will start in 2026. You could be doing something like writing research, doing speeches, advising ministers across the Ministry of Justice, the Department for Business and the Cabinet Office too. You'll get a level three apprenticeship equivalent to two A-levels. You'll also be paid at least 23k starting salary at the same time, which is obviously good news. Earlier this year, the Cabinet Chief Pat McFadden said he wanted to hear more accents from across the UK at the heart of government.
They've launched a new apprenticeship scheme to open up the recruitment as well, because I want a civil service that speaks with all the accents of the United Kingdom and not just one. We've got an opportunity to do that. Technology partly gives us an opportunity to do that, but I think a new way of thinking as well. So I think this will be good news for, I'm speaking to you from Manchester today,
right.
Good news for cities like Manchester, Glasgow, Aberdeen, other places around the UK.
I also spoke with the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, last week. Of course, it's A-level results, GCSE results, lots of kids thinking about whether they apply for university or an apprenticeship. She told me that the government should put more emphasis on apprenticeships and skills.
I don't think it's an either-or. It's about making sure that young people have got a range of really strong options. But we haven't had enough priority put into skills and skills training. It's why we're turning that around. We're taking skills seriously and we're investing in our young people with the announcement today.
And of course, Tom, nothing against your lovely Oxbridge education, but of course, getting more working class, normal-ish Brits will do a range of things the government hope. Increase trust in government, increase the ideas and attract more good people into the heart of civil service. So I was digging into the statistics about who works in the civil service. The Institute for Government say it's more diverse than ever, but there is a lot of work to do. In terms of ethnic minorities, around 16% of the civil service are ethnic minorities. That's around compared to around 18% of the population. So they're not doing bad there. The male-female split is also quite good. But what is really poor is socioeconomic background. So a majority, around 50% of civil servants come from a higher socioeconomic background, around a third from a low one. And the higher up you get, the more likely it is you're from a posh background too.
That seemed to me to be, when I was working in it, obviously, there were a lot of people who had been in it for 25, 30 years who'd all come from the same kinds of backgrounds, spoke in the same kind of way, had the same kind of ideas.
Yeah.
That was the issue.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, you know, people that haven't been to university may have been on free school meals, their parents' jobs may have been different. That is going to provide a totally different perspective in the civil service, and that is exactly who the apprenticeship scheme is trying to get in.
Natasha, thank you very much indeed. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor with the exclusive. Let's come back to what has happened in Epping, at least in the court, in the High Court. Here's Lee. Tom, put those migrants in tents on secure army camps. Simple. Do not put them in hotels or housing. That should be for Brits. This will stop the boats, says Lee. Here's another WhatsApp from Charles. Tom, Epping, the problem is the government is not listening. That's when problems happen. Three migrant hotels in Bournemouth, 116 crimes logs. That will be next, suggests Charles. Rudy's in Bristol. Hi, Rudy.
I'd like to make three points. No. One is with Kate Marsh. First of all, she's wrong. They should be detained, especially if they've got no identification. And B, they are criminals because they've entered the country illegally. So that makes them a criminal.
Well,
and if they're prepared to do that, they're prepared to go to any other measures of breaking the law when they are here.
Rudy, it isn't illegal to apply for asylum.
But it's illegal to enter a country illegally.
Just let me finish this. It isn't illegal to apply for asylum. In order to apply for asylum, it for the UK, primarily you have to get to the UK. So the only way in which you can be adjudged to have arrived illegally is if your asylum claim fails. And the problem is it just takes too long. Now, the last Conservative government did bring in legislation that said if you arrive by boat, you've entered illegally, whatever your circumstances. That was repealed by Labour.
But I would say in that they have no right to seek asylum in this country because they are already in a safe country in France.
Well, then you get,
and if they have family here, like they use that excuse, then they can apply in the normal way.
Well, there is no normal way to apply.
Well, they can do it via, then they should put a portal on the internet where they can submit their application with all their stuff, like you would a claim for benefits or whatever, and they could do it that way.
Well, now you're talking about setting up safe and legal routes. That's what you're talking about.
Why would we need a safe and legal route if they're already in a safe country? And make the claim from that country?
Because if you've got a legitimate claim of asylum in Britain, you'd presumably want to get that tested.
But Tom, if it's an illegitimate claim, then why are they destroying their documents? If it's legitimate, they have no reason to destroy their documents.
I agree with you. That's why you should put those people who don't have documents into some form of accommodation that is secure, I think.
So therefore, though, Tom, if they have no documents, we can immediately reject them and say, I'm terribly sorry, because you've got no documents, we cannot process your claim.
I would agree with that. I think that's reasonable. Yeah. The problem is, then, where do you send them to?
Go back to France. Send them back to France.
Well, that's where you need a returns agreement with France, and that's been part of the problem, as you know, Rudy. Look, it's unbelievably and unfairly complicated, this. And it pits the rights of individual nations against the rights of various individuals. It's very, very difficult. But obviously the current status quo cannot continue, is completely maddening. And needs to change. And so there will be, I guess, some people relieved about the fact that this one hotel in Epping now cannot be used, and maybe there will be more court cases about hotels in the future that can't be used. The problem is, where do people go? Still got to go somewhere. Rudy, thank you very much indeed. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Coming up,
we do not want to leave this country. We love it here. So any tax advisors we have in the UK and abroad, we are advised we must leave the UK. There's no other choice.
That non-dom, castle-owning, multi-millionaire Anne Kaplan Mulholland on the news that 60% of millionaires living in Britain now believe that life would be better abroad. Well, then, off you go. Might be a response. We'll speak to her after this. 7:32, news headlines on LBC, Dominic Ellis.
Several councils in England are considering legal action to remove asylum seekers from hotels in their areas. It follows the High Court granting a temporary injunction yesterday, blocking migrants from lodging at the Bell Hotel in Epping. Official figures show inflation unexpectedly rose to 3.8% in July, up from 3.6% on the previous month. The Office for National Statistics says the main driver was a sharp rise in airfares, likely due to the timing of this year's school holidays. And NATO leaders will hold a virtual summit later to discuss security arrangements for Ukraine in the event of a peace deal with Russia. President Trump says Vladimir Zelensky and Vladimir Putin are still preparing to meet, despite no official confirmation. LBC weather, cloudy across central and eastern areas. Sunny spells with patchy cloud elsewhere. Highs of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
LBC is investigating the impact of over-tourism. Sheila Fogarty was joined by the UK General Manager at Intrepid Travel, Joanna Reeve.
Over-tourism is excess negative impact on a destination, something that negatively impacts the local community. We want to tackle the problem, not just pick it up and move it somewhere else. Mm. For us, our how is very much around small, intimate groups.
Listen back to the full interview, thanks to Intrepid Travel, on the LBC app.
Buying a home on a holiday park was a dream that became a nightmare. High-pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases, and a loss of value have left many customers feeling misled, angry, and trapped. But the Holiday Park Advice Centre can help. Contact us today and we'll help claim back any money you're owed on your holiday home. Text ASSIST to 78900 to get started.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Text 84850.
7:34 the time. Tom Swarbrick here on LBC this morning. Here's Rob in Chertsey. Tom, if there is no legal way to enter Britain, how do we allow 1.2 million in legally each year? Not that many, but I take your point. There is, of course, legal migration. That is for work visas, students, family reunion, all that kind of thing, for which you need to apply and for which you need to gain a visa. The problem is, the minute you arrive in Britain and say, hello, asylum, please, you enter an entirely new system. There is no legal compulsion to claim asylum in the first safe country that you come to, and many people's claims of asylum might indeed be fair. The point is, you've got to get tested, and you've got to get tested quickly. And I think if you've not got any documentation, we don't know who you are, we don't know where you come from, you shouldn't be put in a hotel able to wander around a local town centre. And certainly local authorities should be told that there's a hotel coming to their area. We'll get back into the details of that in just a few moments. Let's get a business update. Christian Mayer's here, editor-in-chief at City AM. There's been some news about inflation this morning, Christian, and it's not good.
I'm afraid not. No, the consensus, as far as you can ever have one among economists in the city, was that the rate of inflation would climb to 3.7%. It is, in fact, 3.8%. One of the biggest drivers for that has been an increase in the cost of food and a huge increase in the prices in the services sector, particularly retail, hospitality, leisure. Let's just backtrack to, say, the last couple of months of the previous government. Inflation had come back down to about 2%. Mm-hmm. Why then now is it seeming to be climbing up to 4% again, which is twice the official target rate of the Bank of England? The Bank of England, by the way, expecting it to peak at about 4%. Why has that happened? Well, there are international reasons. There are factors around the issues we have with tariffs and trade and uncertainty and price increases, of course. But one of the reasons that cannot be overlooked in this country is that a lot of the costs that have risen are government-imposed costs. I'm talking about increasing costs for businesses in terms of their tax bill, the cost of employment, and their overheads. And no surprise, as we've discussed many times before, that that's had a particular hit on the hospitality and retail sectors, which account for a huge amount of employment. So that rate of inflation is now a bit of a headache for the Bank of England. They have another decision to make on whether to cut interest rates again in September. There is now question marks over whether or not that will happen. You know, you don't have to go back very far to find a period where there was a consensus that they will keep cutting their rates. The governor of the Bank of England, Andrew Bailey, has been very clear in recent weeks, in fact, that there is uncertainty in this. And we know that the members of that committee who vote are pretty split. This fresh data will give them pause for thought. Also, of course, a headache for the Chancellor, who's going to have to try and explain this state of affairs.
Meanwhile, she looks over at the price of government borrowing and finds that it is, certainly at the 30-year end of government borrowing, going up quite a lot. I mean, that's headroom gone. That's the money down the in your back pocket that the government has to spend on stuff. That's gone.
Yes, one of the many reasons why the government is in such a mess when it comes to the budget they're going to have to pull together in the coming months is the cost of government borrowing. The UK spends a quite eye-watering amount of money servicing the cost of its own borrowing, and there are long-standing and complicated reasons for that, many of which date back to decisions taken by George Osborne. But it is a huge burden on public finances. The cost of borrowing in the bond markets, which is how the government goes about this activity, on that longer-term horizon, as you put it, has risen higher than the peak of the crisis under Liz Truss. Yeah. And everybody associates the bond market chaos with the Liz Truss experiment. She now, you know, pops up and down on social media three or four times a day to point out that it's those prices are higher now than under her supposed crisis. There are different reasons for that. It is a real headache for the government. Their fiscal headroom, the figures that they have to maintain a certain allowance in their public finances each year, is getting slimmer and slimmer. And, of course, it leads to a situation, as we now know, where they're going to have to, depending on which forecaster and economic analysis you want to look at, going to have to raise between 20 and 40 billion pounds in taxes. That is not easy to do when they've ruled out pulling the big tax levers on VAT, on national insurance, again, on income tax. Where are they going to look? Well, they're going to have to get creative.
Well, one of the areas they seem to be getting creative on, which you've led me brilliantly onto, Christian, is capital gains tax on the sale of your property. Now, you're charged, I think, capital gains tax on the sale of your second home, if you're lucky enough to have one. But this is an idea from Rachel Reeves to hit the owners of high-value properties with capital gains tax when they sell their homes.
Yes, this is going to prove exceptionally controversial, not least.
You reckon?
Not least among homeowners in some parts of the country, of course, but certainly predominantly in London and the South East. You have never had to pay a tax on the gain of value, your capital gain, when you sell your home if it's your only home. As you say, that you do have to pay capital gains tax when you sell a second home. It's deemed as an investment asset, fair enough. This could now see a situation where high-rate taxpayers could pay 24% of the value of any gain they make on the increase of value of property when they sell
it. Sorry, Chris. 24%?
So if you're a higher-rate taxpayer, your rate of capital gains is higher than if you're a basic-rate taxpayer, which would be at about 18%. Oh, so you're looking at a situation where somebody listening to this, somebody in London or the South East or indeed elsewhere, could, and this is hypothetical at this stage, the Treasury is flying these kites, if there was a threshold of, say, £1.5 million at which you're going to start paying capital gains, you could sell that property and be left with a tax bill of about £200,000. Now, what is that going to mean? Very often it will mean that you don't sell that house. Yeah. So you situation where you have people who want to downsize who don't. We talked yesterday about various ways in which the Chancellor wants to change property taxation in this country, some sensible, some less sensible to my mind. This would be a big spanner in the works of a part of the housing market that has to be unlocked. If you want people to downsize, if you want a bit more mobility in the market, this is not going to achieve that. This is not an announcement from the government. We're going to get this for the next couple of months.
Yep.
They float these, great journalists dig it out, in this case in the Times. It's going to be a huge debate, but it's effectively a mansion tax, which has often been raised and floated in this country by Ed Miliband and by Vince Cable and others, and now it's rearing its head again, for sure.
Christian, as always, a tour de force, if it is it all pretty much bad news. Thank you very much indeed. Christian Bayes, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. I mean, he's laid it out there for you folks. Cost of government borrowing is going up and up and up and up. Prices, particularly in the supermarkets, are going up and up and up and up. We were promised it would get back to 2% inflation. It's going up to near enough 4. Meanwhile, this idea, this kite flying that is going on from the Treasury head of the budget, that you would now pay capital gains tax on the sale of your property. If you're a higher rate taxpayer, that would be 24% of the value of any gain from the sale of that property. If you're a basic rate taxpayer, that would be 18%. Here's what you're going to do, right? Here's what any sensible person would do in that situation. If this ever comes in, you don't sell. You wait it out. You wait until they're replaced. Why would you risk incurring enormous sums of money to pay to move house on a value that you didn't do anything sure to accrue, but it's sort of then not your fault if you have to pay something on it? You're already paying taxes for the sale of your property anyway, whether it comes to stamp duty or whatever else ingenious way they get you to part with your money for the sale of your own private property to another private individual. But this is going to clog up the property market even further, I would have thought. 03456060973 is the number. 7:42. Talking of money.
I mean, Rodney, this time next year we will be millionaires.
Now, I don't think they'd be leaving the country, but some 60% of millionaires living in Britain believe that life would be better abroad, according to a survey of 1,000 of the nation's wealthiest. It found that 53% would be more likely to leave if Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor, pressed ahead with a wealth tax. The migration consultancy Art and Capital, which commissioned the study, said it showed that Britain was at a tipping point. Dr. Anne Kaplan-Mulholland is a Canadian, castle-owning, non-dom, self-made multimillionaire, and joins me live, I think, Anne, from what I can see behind you, presumably from your castle in Kent. Very good morning to you.
Good morning. It is in my castle in Kent, yes.
Beautiful scenes. Now, we have spoken many times before about this issue. You have, I think, set yourself up to move to Milan. Is that right?
We're moving to Italy, and we have fairly much completed our application process and all of the due diligence that goes with it. So we're in a very serious, we're moving.
When do you move?
We have to move by April 5th, because then our day count starts and our day count ends. So that'll be our 4 years in the UK.
Right. So that is the point at which you are upping sticks and leaving.
Yes.
Why have you decided to do that?
because we're being taxed, according to Rachel Reeves, on our worldwide income. We have multiple businesses worldwide. We have properties worldwide, and we will be taxed on that. We also have the inheritance tax, which doesn't make any sense for us. We're very happy to stay here. We do not want to go. But it doesn't make any sense to be paying tax in England, setting up the infrastructure we have, investing millions and millions of pounds in England, and then be taxed on worldwide income that we're already paying tax on. Uh-huh. Why would anyone stay and be double taxed?
This is the non-dom regime that
we're This is a non-dom yeah. regime because we're non-domicile residents of the UK.
Talk to me about the inheritance tax bit as well. So what is it about the inheritance tax changes that you say mean that you're going to leave the country?
Well, we would be taxed on worldwide assets, and they would not be protected by trusts. And so when you're people like us that have built companies, legitimate companies worldwide, and then we do have trusts that protect some of our assets for our children, that's how we've built up our structure. This is not a tax dodging scheme. It's just how we built our structures for our six children. That those would not be protected. They would be taxed with inheritance tax by the UK because we're residents.
There are lots of people listening to this now, almost certainly screaming at their radio, saying, well, if you really like this country so much, you would do your bit to pay a bit more in the transfer of your wealth to your children, for which they have done nothing other than the great luck of being your child, to help with the NHS, the roads, the schools that people will use.
We're not talking about the UK assets. We're talking about the worldwide assets. Why would anyone stay in a country when you're going to be taxed in that country? We can very easily leave, move to Italy, and then we're not subject to tax worldwide. It's a business decision. It doesn't make any sense to do that. And now we're going to be paying tax on our investments in Italy. We'll be paying tax on any income we make in Italy. And we're paying $200,000 per year to stay in Italy. Now, if we were told, stay here in the UK, pay the $200,000 here, that would make more sense. Plus, if we were asked to invest in the UK, which we do. So we're investing about £25 million in the UK, wow. And we're taxed on that. Plus, our 100 employees are taxed on that. So why would we make a bad business decision when we're already investing in the UK, we're already paying tax in here, and it's very easy for us to just pack up and go and not have to do that? And that's what all the other non-domicile millionaires mm-hmm. and billionaires are doing, because it doesn't make any sense.
Very good to talk to you. Thanks for coming on, Anne Kaplan-Mulholland, Canadian castle-owning, non-dom, self-made, multi-millionaire, speaking to us from her castle in Kent. Here's Gavin. Tom, I'm not a millionaire. I'm not even a 10,000er. And even I know I would be better to live abroad. The only difference is I don't have a choice to go there. My heart definitely doesn't bleed for the lady who you've been speaking to. 0345 60 60 973 is the number. Coming up,
Palestine Action is not simply a protest group voicing political views. This is a group that has waged an escalating campaign.
As the leader of the Liberal Democrats calls for a review of terrorism legislation after the proscription of Palestine Action, we'll speak to the security minister who says the group are dangerous. 7:47, news headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Councils in England are preparing legal action to try and stop hotels in their areas housing asylum seekers. Official figures show inflation rose unexpectedly to 3.8% in July. And NATO leaders are expected to hold a virtual summit later to discuss security arrangements for Ukraine in the event of a truce with Russia. LBC weather, cloudy across central and eastern areas, sunny spells with patchy cloud elsewhere, highs of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the A2 westbound from Gravesend to the M25 junction. And that was following that accident, but all the lanes are now back open. Also problems in Crayford. Thames Road is closed eastbound for some emergency repair works, and that's causing long delays back to Erith. And in Chislehurst, Centre Common Road is closed both ways because of an accident. Also on the A2, it's very busy westbound up to the Sun in the Sands. So that's heading towards the Blackwall Tunnel, and that's because a car has broken down. Also problems on the train. Stansted Express services aren't running. It's because of an ongoing investigation, which also means that Greater Anglia services are disrupted via Tottenham Hale. So if you're heading that way to the airport, do allow yourself extra time.
LBC.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door at a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
This is LBC.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Tesco Finest Cod. A different kettle of fish. Pan-fried with garlic, slowly baked in butter, or finished with a squeeze of lemon. It'll get you hooked either way. It's why only the finest cuts of wild-caught cod are selected for our delicate and flaky cod loins. Mm. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland.
Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crispin' with Walker's. Delicious.
Get a step closer to winning a huge £20,000. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Win Plus, great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity, we actually reward you for it. That's why, when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power.
Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10 to 8 the time. Let's move from tax to the small boats with the UK, we're told, to bolster new international partnerships and new work to undermine the business model of organised criminal gangs facilitating those dangerous small boat crossings. The government of Iraq have visited the UK, and which, we're told, demonstrates the strength of partnership in addressing shared challenges. Dan Jarvis is the Minister of State for Security and Labour MP for Barnsley North and joins me live. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme this morning, Minister. You said that there's a new agreement being signed. What is new about it? Morning.
It's a new agreement that will improve our ability to return people who come here illegally from Iraq. We're very grateful to the cooperation of the Iraqi government. We've worked very closely with them throughout the duration of this parliament. The Home Secretary was there at the back end of last year, and our Prime Minister met with their Prime Minister earlier this year. If we're serious about stopping the boats, and we are very serious about doing that, we've got to get upstream of the problem, and we've got to work internationally with our allies and our partners, both in Europe, and of course we work very closely with the French and the Germans and with others, but also further afield as well. And this new deal that we've signed will mean that it will be much easier and will be much more effective to be able to return people who've come from that country in a way that we weren't able to do previously.
So what's the change that's been made in this new agreement that you have signed with Iraq's Deputy Foreign Minister?
Well, the change is that it puts in place mechanisms and processes to speed up and make more effective the transfer of people back to that country who've come here. So, as I say, we're very grateful for their cooperation.
Are you able to tell us how, Mr. Jarvis? What are those processes going to be able to do that haven't previously existed?
Well, there is a memorandum of understanding and a commitment at both ends to work more quickly than has been the case previously. There are a number of particular metrics that are in place, and we've reached this agreement whereby that process will work more effectively and more smoothly than it was previously. But the bigger picture is about getting upstream of the challenge. It's about targeting the vile smuggling networks that seek to bring people here. And it's about preventing people from getting to the beaches of northern France in the first place.
Just
and
finally,
that requires international cooperation, not absolutely. Just with Iraq, but with a range of different countries right around the world. And we're making real progress in terms of further establishing those relationships.
So we get a speeding up of the process of returning people. Be interesting to know from what to what, how quickly that could happen. And what do the Iraqis get from us?
Well, we have a good and constructive relationship with the Iraqis, and there are a number of areas, both in terms of security, but also serious organised crime, where we're seeking to cooperate. Defence is another one. So we are keen to work as closely with them as we possibly can.
Are we paying them? We're not
paying them. When the Home Secretary was there at the back end of last year, there was some specific financial support that we provided to enable certain activity around targeting the smuggling networks. But this is a relationship, a partnership. As I say, we're very grateful for their cooperation. It sits alongside other arrangements that we're working on with other countries, because we've got to get upstream of the problem. We've got to target the challenge at source. The National Crime Agency have done a lot of very good proactive work targeting those networks. You will have seen a number of arrests in Europe and further afield recently. But that is the best way that we can seek to address the problem that everybody understands that we're facing as a country.
Can I come to this High Court decision over the hotel in Epping? One of the arguments put forward by the Home Office is that to grant this injunction to remove people from this hotel would act as an impetus for further violent protests around other asylum accommodation. Is that now your concern, Minister?
Well, our immediate concern is to phase out the use of hotels altogether. We've never believed that hotels are suitable accommodation for asylum seekers. That's why we made a very clear commitment to reduce to zero the number of hotels that are in use. So under the previous government, there were over 400 hotels. That number is now down to just over 200. That is still too high. But the way in which we will drive down that further is in part through the work that we were just talking about a moment ago, but also in terms of speeding up and making much more effective the asylum decision-making process.
Yes.
We inherited a massive backlog from the previous government. In the year or so of this government, we've increased that process by 116%. It's much more effective than it was previously. Mm-hmm. And 35,000 people have been returned who had no right to be here.
Understood. Nevertheless, the Home Office argument against this was in part because the worry of further violent protests. Is that still the worry of the Home Office, isn't it? This would be more violent protests around these hotels, in part in order to get an injunction.
Well, of course, we don't want to see any violent protests anywhere. And I think it's worth understanding the context that for reasons that your listeners will understand, as do I, there have been very long-standing concerns about the use of this particular hotel that go back a number of years. So concerns have been expressed going back more than 5 years since it was first opened. It was opened again for a second time in 2022, and at that point there was a conversation about whether there would be a challenge by the local authority. The specifics of the legal challenge actually relate to a planning matter.
They do.
And the specific use of that hotel. So we're looking very closely at the judgment. Clearly, we are in the process of identifying contingency options for what's going to happen to those people who are currently accommodated in that hotel in Epping.
What seems the likeliest contingency option?
Well, with respect, the legal judgment was only handed down yesterday afternoon.
It's an HMO, isn't it? If it's not a hotel, it's a flat somewhere or a bedsit.
Well, as I say, we're looking at contingency options for how those people can be appropriately accommodated. But the bigger picture issue is driving down the use of hotels altogether. We don't think that is an appropriate solution, and that's why we're working at pace to speed up the asylum decision-making process.
Can I come to Palestine Action? The leader of the Liberal Democrats says he wants a review of terror legislation because of the manner in which this group were proscribed. You say that they're not a legitimate protest group. Why?
Well, they're not a legitimate protest group for the reasons that I spelt out previously, including in Parliament. But it's very important to make the point that the prescription of this particular group does not in any way infringe on people's absolute lawful right to protest about the intolerable situation that we see in Gaza. The prescription of Palestine Action doesn't prevent anybody from going onto the streets or wherever they wish to go to protest about the outrageous scenes that we're seeing in the Middle East. The Home Secretary took the decision to prescribe based on very clear and compelling evidence. That is, as it happens, evidence that we've shared with other political parties, including with the Liberal Democrats. Your point at the outset was about the definition of terrorism. Now, I genuinely welcome the debate. I've discussed it with the Liberal Democrats. Of course, we keep these things under very close review. The government has an independent reviewer of terrorism legislation, Jonathan Hall KC. Mm-hmm. He looks at these things very carefully and very regularly, as do we.
There's a way of deprescribing them, perhaps.
There is a legal process of deprescription that is available to any group that has been prescribed.
And are you looking at, you're keeping that in review, are you, I guess?
There is a process of legal challenge, as there often is, and that is ongoing. But the decision to prescribe was taken in order to secure the safety of the public. Much of the information is not in the public domain.
Why not?
In part because of ongoing police investigations, but primarily because of ongoing legal proceedings and court proceedings that will be taking place later in this year. And we have to be incredibly careful not to get in the way of those processes.
What is it, finally on this, what is it that Davey isn't understanding about the reasons behind the prescription of this organisation?
Well, you'd have to ask him what he doesn't understand, but at every stage of this process, I've been in close contact with the Liberal Democrats. And as I say, I welcome the challenge that they have made. We do look very closely and very carefully at the legal definition. There has been a number of debates around it recently. The independent reviewer, Jonathan Hall, he can speak for himself. Mm-hmm. But in broad terms, I think that there is a sense that the current legal description is appropriate, and I don't see any immediate reason why we'd want to change that. But the fundamental point is around prescription. These are not decisions that are taken lightly. These are decisions taken by the Home Secretary in order to keep the public safe. And based on the evidence...
From an 8-year-old wearing a T-shirt.
Well, I think you're now talking about arrests that have been made by the police.
They're not terrorist supporters, are they?
Nobody is above the law, and it is a criminal offence to support a prescribed group. I think it's important as well to reiterate the point about the group itself. By their own admission, they are not a non-violent group. So the Home Secretary took the decision in order to secure public safety, and I understand why there is disquiet in some quarters about it, but I think as more information emerges about the nature of their activities, there is quite a bit in the public domain already, mm-hmm. people will understand why the decision had to be taken, and they will also understand that protest is an absolutely cornerstone part of our democracy. And nothing that we have done or will ever do will get in the way of people's lawful right to protest about the situation in Gaza or whatever else it is they might want to protest about.
Final 30 seconds. Why has the government withdrawn its demand that Apple provide British authorities with a way into their encrypted messages?
Well, as a security minister, I don't think that you would expect me to comment on matters relating to operational security. And it is a very long-standing protocol to neither confirm nor deny the existence of technical capability notices. But what I can say is that this government will do everything that we possibly can to keep the public safe from terrorists, paedophiles and serious organised criminals. And the processes of lawful access to data that are in place help us to keep the public safe.
Thank you very much indeed for your time. Dan Jarvis is Minister of State for Security, Labour MP for Barnsley North. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. The news at 8 is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
Tom,
From Global's newsroom, several councils in England are considering legal challenges to remove asylum seekers from hotels in their areas. It follows the High Court granting a temporary injunction blocking migrants from lodging at the Bell Hotel in Epping. The local council had argued public safety was being put at risk because of ongoing disruption and protests. Security Minister Dan Jarvis has told Tom the government is now studying yesterday's judgment very carefully.
Clearly, we are in the process of identifying contingency options for what's going to happen to those people who are currently accommodated in that hotel in Epping.
What seems the likeliest contingency option?
Well, with respect, the legal judgment was only handed down yesterday afternoon.
It's an HMO, isn't it? If it's not a hotel, it's a flat somewhere or a bedsit.
As I say, we're looking at contingency options.
Official figures show the rate of inflation rose to 3.8% in July, up from 3.6% the previous month. That's well above the government's target of 2%. The Office for National Statistics says the cost of food, fuel and airfares all increased. Shadow Chancellor Samuel Strides told LBC the rise will stretch those already struggling.
It's going to put a lot of pressure on the hard-working families, and it's due to Labour's choices. They put up taxes on jobs that's been passed on in part by way of higher prices. They borrowed a lot of money, spent a lot of money, which has been inflationary. Those are the choices that have led us to where we are now.
The Chancellor has admitted there's more work to do, but says measures are being taken to stabilise the public finances. NATO leaders will hold a virtual summit later to discuss security arrangements for Ukraine in the event of a peace deal with Russia. President Trump says Vladimir Zelensky and Vladimir Putin are still prepared to meet, despite no official confirmation. The largest global review on vaping in young people has found children who do it are more likely to become smokers. Research shows children who vape are three times more likely to take up tobacco. Experts have also linked vaping with a greater likelihood of developing several health issues. And the Department for Science is to absorb the UK Space Agency. It says the government looks to save money and cut duplication. But some supporters of the Space Agency have warned its loss of independence could lead to the UK losing ground on competitors. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 91.89. It closed at 31 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells for most, some cloud across central and eastern areas, feeling cooler, highs of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Summer's best bits. Relaxing on beaches. Catching up with friends and family. And here's another summer highlight. Right now with SEAT Summer Savings, you get £500 off the SEAT range on top of existing offers. Just order and take delivery by the 30th of September. SEAT Summer Savings. Now on.
T's and C's and exclusions apply. UK retail customers 18 plus. Excludes SEAT Ibiza. New stock vehicles only, subject to availability. Saving including VAT applied to on the road price.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 5 minutes past eight the time on Wednesday, August the 20th. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Hope we find you well. Vandalism or patriotism?
I don't think the Union flag is in any way far right. And my constituents, especially the veterans, are absolutely not far right at all.
Now roundabouts are sprayed with the Cross of St George as councils take down flags attached to lampposts. We'll get into the details. Also,
there's no way William and the family will move in there. It will still be Monarchy HQ, but now Charles has already started opening up more to the public. That will definitely continue.
As William and Kate have their forever home somewhere near Windsor, questions raised about the future of Buckingham Palace. Apparently none of them want to live there. What do you think? Big Tesco's? Plus,
this is really something very different from CCTV, and we need proper laws in place to protect us.
Facial recognition technology being used at Notting Hill Carnival this year as the police tell their officers to stop dancing. Is that event safe?
Call 0345 6060 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Very good morning to you. First this hour.
Anyone who believes in those traditional British values of the freedom of speech and the right to peaceful protest should be worried about that. And I hope we'll get behind the Liberal Democrat call.
The leader of the Liberal Democrats there, Ed Davey, calling for a review of the law, which has seen Palestine Action supporters arrested at demonstrations across Britain in recent weeks. He said that while Palestine Action have committed criminal acts and are, quotes, a very worrying organisation, he says people are being arrested en masse. You'll be aware, I think earlier this week, we talked about it on the programme, the Irish novelist Sally Rooney has said that she intends to use the proceeds from her work, whether it's around the great hit Normal People and the dramatisation of that, whether it's other books she's written, she's going to use the proceeds from that work to support Palestine Action, to help fund Palestine Action. Number 10 saying that supporting the group was an offence under the Terrorism Act. A little earlier, I spoke with the security minister, Dan Jarvis.
By their own admission, they are not a non-violent group. So the Home Secretary took the decision in order to secure public safety. And I understand why there is disquiet in some quarters about it. But I think as more information emerges about the nature of their activities, there is quite a bit in the public domain already, mm-hmm. people will understand why the decision had to be taken. And they will also understand that protest is an absolutely cornerstone part of our democracy. And nothing that we have done or will ever do will get in the way of people's lawful right to protest about the situation in Gaza or whatever else it is they might want to protest about.
Security Minister Dan Jarvis responding to that claim from Sir Ed Davey to have a review of those laws because of the prescription of that group as a terror organisation. The government say that this is a violent group. They distribute sort of pamphlets or material to help further their cause, and that there are plenty of other ways of riding to the or coming to the protest to support Palestinian rights without supporting this particular group. Do you believe that a review is needed, or is this a fair decision based on what is publicly available about what this group has been doing? Lord John Walney is an independent peer and former advisor on political violence and disruption to the UK government. Thank you for coming on the programme, John. Your view of the prescription of this group, is this a legitimate use of this piece of legislation and therefore the arrest of many, many over 60s, it would seem, who take to the streets in support of them?
Yes, I was in favour of the prescription of Palestine Action. They have conducted a five-year-long campaign of criminal sabotage. It's been systematic. It has targeted. Obviously the most high profile was the targeting of the RAF base, mm-hmm. RAF Fairford, but they've also targeted defence factories, causing great intimidation and at times violently attacking workers there, and also a number of. Of completely unrelated businesses that they've managed to find, in their view, some tangential link to Israel. Now, it is less understood than it should be. I think this is part of the problem, that the definition of terrorism in this country that's enshrined in the act that was passed in the year 2000, that squarely includes criminal damage as one of the potential ways in which people can terrorise their fellow citizens, terrorise the country, by which we mean to commit criminal acts, to try to frighten people or intimidate government into doing what they want. And that is absolutely part of the definition, and therefore they meet the... they do meet the criteria for prescription.
Yes, although
the government has done it.
Yes, although in people's minds, the idea of a group being a terrorist group because they damage property feels a very, very long way away. Thank goodness, of course, from the terrorism that we have experienced as a nation on the streets of this country. They haven't killed anyone.
That is the case. There is not the understanding, I think, that of the different ways in which people can terrorize. But of course, there is prescription banning a group as a terrorist group. It is a binary thing, and it does include a whole host of organizations which. Many members of the public might not have heard of. Of course, it also includes those most violent organisations that have have targeted and murdered and assassinated organisations. So I do understand that. One of the things that I am pressing the government to do is to introduce a new category of ban, a ban for an organisation without labelling them as terrorists, with putting a criminal penalties on those who support them, which are below less than the terrorist than the terrorist threshold, that could have applied to Palestine Action, I think, in the years before the government decided it met the criminal threshold, because what they were doing for all of that time, brazenly committing criminal acts. I mean, they were using their social media to advertise that they were going to break in. They were sometimes live streaming what they were doing. That was completely wrong. It was against the public interest. We shouldn't have allowed them to operate as freely as they did. So I think there is a case for taking action against these organisations before they reach the terrorist threshold, as Palestine Action eventually did.
John, thank you for coming on. Lord John Walney is an independent peer, former advisor on political violence and disruption to the UK government. You'll be aware of the hundreds of people who were arrested for showing their support for this proscribed terror group. Ed Davies saying that the Lib Dems abstained on a vote about proscribing that organisation because, he says, we didn't think the government had made that case. Is that your view? Khalid's in Leicester. Khalid.
Hi, Tom.
Hello, mate. Your thoughts on the proscription of this group and Ed Davies' upset at it?
Yes, so the thing is, look, there is already laws for criminal damage, first of all, right? And the thing is, you know, they are not going the intent to harm people. On the contrary, we have to look at a bigger picture, Tom. Why are they protesting? Which is a grievance of millions of people up and down the country and throughout the world.
But they have hurt people.
Yeah, well, there's laws for that. There's laws for violence.
They target people. As I read, there's been a targeting of Jewish businesses. They've, in going into defence companies and sort of, you know, driving JCBs through the gates and stuff, they've hurt security guards and police officers. They distribute manuals saying this is how you do it and keep yourself the right side of the police and not get detected. That's not the actions of a protest group who've got the concerns of Palestinians at their heart first and foremost, is it?
I agree with you, but look, me personally, look, I am, you know, I wouldn't go around harming any innocent person I agree with you on that aspect. But we have to look at the bigger picture, Tom. The other thing is, look, if I handed every single one of these Palestine Action representatives or members, as it were, if I handed them all a gun and they went and used that gun and shot somebody, what would I be done for?
Well, you'd be done this way, I think, complicity in terrorism.
Right, exactly. So therefore, our government is on the one side saying, yes, sir, we want a two-state solution, etc. But they're handing the guns to the people who are killing people, killing babies on a daily basis. They're handing the guns, weapons.
That's only if you accept that what Israel is doing in Gaza is terrorism, and clearly there is debate about that.
This is not a debate, Tom. Come on.
Well, it is, Ashley. With respect, it is a debate. It is literally a debate. It is a big debate as to whether or not what Israel is doing in Gaza counts as terrorism.
Hundreds of Israeli historians, Israeli scholars of genocide have stated, and I can name that.
Well, they've talked about genocide, and they've talked about war crimes. But those are different things,
too. They're committing both, Tom. They're going to open your eyes.
It's not up to me to decide what genocide is or isn't. You can come to a view based on what you see, and you have to challenge what you see pretty carefully, I think, these days. So you can use that word if you like. It's not an established fact that it is. There are, of course, claims of war crimes. They need to be investigated. And claims of genocide. They need to be investigated, too. Terrorism is a different thing. And you do not need to support an organisation that carries out violence in order to say that what is happening in Palestine is currently and has been disgraceful. You don't need to do it. So why would you? Khalid, thank you very much indeed for the call. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Coming up.
And why is it that when some people see an England flag, the first thing they think of is some raging racist member of the EDL or some sort of skinhead?
The St George's Cross taken down from lampposts by councils across the country. Now they're going for the roundabouts, graffitied with red paint to appear like that flag. Is that wanton vandalism or pure patriotism? We'll get into it after the 8:17 news headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Councils in England are preparing legal action to try and stop hotels in their areas housing asylum seekers. Official figures show inflation rose unexpectedly to 3.8% in July. And NATO leaders are expected to hold a virtual summit later to discuss security arrangements for Ukraine in the event of a truce with Russia. LBC weather, cloudy across central and eastern areas, sunny spells with patchy cloud elsewhere, highs of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M1 southbound to junction 15A at Toaster, and that's where a car has broken down. In Clapham, the A3, which is Clapham Common north side, is closed northbound, and that's because of a fire. Very busy on the A2 westbound up to the Sun in the Sands. There are delays all the way back to Bexley. It's taking about 45 minutes to get through. It's because a car has broken down. Also, problems on Upper Thames Street. In right near to Cannon Street Station, there's been an accident, and that's causing delays both ways. Back to Blackfriars Underpass and also back to Tower Hill. On the trains, no Stansted Express services running, and Greater Anglia can't run between Cheshunt and Hertford East, and also up to Stansted Mount Fitchett. It's because of an investigation.
This is LBC.
Moving in is one thing. Making it feel like home, that's where Gumtree comes in. You spot a leather three-seater sofa. It's gorgeous and local, and it's yours by the weekend. Suddenly, the place feels like you, and you feel ready for a big sit-down. Download the app today.
Gumtree.
This is LBC.
When they're away at uni, and the show you all love is on telly. When you're miles apart, but still laughing at the same joke. When the emojis come thick and fast.
Ah, triple smiley face and a heart.
I knew they'd love that.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. Make sure your child has a TV licence when they go to uni, so they're covered to watch all TV channels and you can still enjoy all those TV moments in the family group chat.
Tesco Finest Sugar Bell Tomatoes. The ultimate supporting act. Zinging up salads or elevating fresh linguine. Perfect for when you want to be vined and dined. It's why only the finest varieties are hand-picked when perfectly ripe, to ensure our Sugar Bell tomatoes are exceptionally sweet. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV, plus change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 606097.
20 past 8, the time. Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. We're going to pick up on matters financial later on during the programme, whether it's the rising inflation that we've just seen announced, whether it's the increase in the government borrowing and now plans to tax you further. Yes, they're coming at it again, this time for your house. If you were to sell your property, the idea is, certainly on the front page of the Times, that you would be charged capital gains on it. Now, you're charged that on your second, if you are lucky enough to have one. Brackets, I don't. But on your first property, the notion would be that higher rate taxpayers would have to pay 24% of the value of any gain from the increase in the value of your property. Is that something that you're going to wear? People have been talking about it as if it were a mansion tax. You might get into the details of that a little bit later. We'll talk about these roundabouts. I had to go to the dentist yesterday, take the children. It's a lovely trip out for them for the summer holidays. Come on, kids, come and watch Dad in the dentist chair. Borough Green is where my dentist is. And there are two British flags flying. One from the flagpole outside the front of the church, and then there's another one further down the high street. Fantastic, lovely, look great, wonderful. From every lamppost would feel a little bit American to me. And my God, we don't want to feel American. It's a bit over the top, isn't it? You want understated patriotism. So all this drawing of St George's crosses on roundabouts because the council have taken down the flag, is that patriotism or is that vandalism? I will come to that in just a moment. John's in Birmingham. Back to Palestine action. Hi, John.
Morning, Mr. Swarbrick. How did the dentist go for you, first of all?
It was like pulling teeth. Carry on.
Palestine action. For me, they crossed the line. They went onto a military base. They vandalised those planes. And what we were told, it was £7 million worth of damage, whether it's done with the spray can or whether it's done with some other form. They became a terrorist organisation. But what really gets my goat is when we keep hearing these ministers and listening to that minister that you had on earlier. Sorry, I didn't catch his name. But you can see, and I will come back on air, they're going to end up swinging back and declassifying them. I can see it happening.
Yes, there was some, there was a way out of this prescription business, wasn't there, that was offered by the security minister, Dan Jarvis. But that is true of potentially any organisation that commits terrorism. I guess the difference here, John, is that the organisations we would think of as terrorists go out of their way to kill people. This organisation hasn't.
But not, because when you think about it, there's £7 million worth of UK money, and then we're looking at other situations when we've got homeless, we've got other situations.
Oh, no, John,
and
you can't do that.
God knows where we're getting the money. Where we're getting the money from, Tom, is... Tom, if that had have happened, and that had been a bomb that they'd have put inside one of those military bases and done
bomb,
that damage,
it's a bomb.
That would have still been done there.
Of course, and that's a totally different set of circumstances. I agree with you that what happened at Bryce Norton was absolutely disgraceful and shocking. What I actually didn't know, John, I'll be honest with you, I did not know this until I sort of was reading about this group. They'd done a lot of these ramming of big machines into the gates of defence industries, of defence companies around the country, and in the process had attacked people with a sledgehammer. Now that, there are people who were legitimately worried about the Palestinian cause, absolutely fine. Why you would need to align yourself with a group that would do things like this in order to support that cause, I've got no idea.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
And the local area where I live, we've just had the protests to do with the hotels up here in the Midlands. I'm not going to say specifically where it is. And I've got my children in that situation. I'm not, where they put them in hotels, whatever. But for me, it's the rhetoric and the issues that are now coming out that are going to end up causing us massive issues. We'll end up with riots like we had a number of years ago. It's going to happen, Tom. The government need to get a backbone, because at the moment, in my book, they're getting a UN ungraded, and actually start to make a solid stance on this, where they're not going to flip-flop out of situations. Otherwise, we're going to end up in real trouble, mate.
All right. John, appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed. Much more to come on that. 8:24 is the time. Next.
Personally, I'll fly my flag with pride, no problem. If people decide that that's racist, that's their call.
Roundabouts, graffitied with red paint to appear like St George's flags, have been criticised by local residents as, quote, wanton vandalism. At least six mini roundabouts in the Birmingham area have been painted with red crosses to look like the England flag. King's Heath and Yardley Wood areas have been painted over the weekend. This is after councils have been taking down those flags that have been attached to lampposts. Ava Vidal is a journalist and comedian. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. I wonder what you make of the painting of these roundabouts. Is this vandalism or patriotism?
I don't think it's either. I think it's just pathetic, really.
It's okay.
Sorry, I just do.
What about it is pathetic?
It doesn't particularly look great. You've just painted it on out of spite. I mean, the whole point is, it's not as though the flags were taken down. Birmingham City Council said they were taken down because they're doing new LED lighting fitting. It's been taken on and regurgitated as though it's some kind of anti-English movement on the behalf of Birmingham Council. It just wasn't. And now you've gone and painted those little roundabouts. It's like, oh God, just grow up.
Would that be a similar criticism of people who have the LGBT crossings on the road? Is that a similar?
No, they're done by the council. How can anybody make a comparison? They're done properly. They're done professionally. There's no comparison at all. I just think constantly people just take apples and oranges and put them together and do comparisons that are just not the same.
Okay, so how would you feel if one year the council said, St George's Day, we are going to draw red crosses on each of the white zebra crossings for this particular crossing outside a school to mark it?
No problem. No problem at all. I'm a black woman of Caribbean descent. I understand how that flag makes people uncomfortable.
Does it make you uncomfortable?
outside a sporting event? Yes, it does. Just because of what it symbolizes. But for years, I've been saying, I do understand also the other side of it. If you're seeing other flags from other countries, I do understand if you don't know the history of it. Mm. If you didn't grow up having, you know, skinheads marching and, sure. and carrying it, you don't understand. Mm. I've always said we should have a big Reclaim the Flag festival, you know, where we reclaim it from the racists and we just, you know, we use it and we say, this is what it symbolizes. We don't accept it being used in that kind of manner to intimidate people. You know, just have another bank holiday.
Well, that would be nice, although I'm not sure we'd get the economy moving. What would you say then to someone who says, well, I find the flying of the Palestinian flag intimidating and uncomfortable?
I mean, people do say that. I don't agree with it. I don't find it offensive or whatever. I don't find it in the same way when people are going through, hardship during war, in the same way the Ukrainian flag doesn't bother me. It just mm-hmm. doesn't bother me. If people want to show their solidarity, you know, when Charlie Hebdo happened, loads of people put up the French flag.
But I want to show my solidarity with this wonderful nation that has provided huge amounts for so many people over so many centuries by flying a St. George's flag.
Which, well, okay, I'm not going to get into debate of what England has done over the centuries for different people. I'm not saying people can't fly the St. George's flag. I'm saying they can. I'm just saying it looked a bit silly. It wasn't particularly well done when it was painted onto the ground. But do I think they're vandals? No, I don't. Do they should they be criminalised? No. I think we need to calm down.
Why? Just very briefly, the cross of St. George makes you uncomfortable. The Palestine flag doesn't. That's a sign of solidarity. Is that... That's because of your experience living here, Ava, is it? That you saw the skinheads and the racists march with that flag about you.
Yeah.
But the Palestine flag represents something that you haven't necessarily experienced because you're not Palestinian. But in Palestine, many atrocities will have been committed under that flag too, potentially.
But look, I understand. I'm really not touching this subject too, apart from to say, I understand the Palestinian flag is offensive to some people. I don't agree with their reasons for it, but I do understand some people find it so. I'm just saying, me personally, I can only speak for myself. Mm. I don't find it offensive. I don't find the Ukrainian flag offensive, and I understand why people fly both.
Good to have you on. Thank you for your time. Ava Vidal is a journalist and comedian. The difficult, and I sound like a prefect all the time, and I don't want to shout at you to do your top button up and tuck your shirt in, but come on. The difference between the zebra crossing thing for LGBT, the council have done it themselves, isn't it? That's the. But would there be any council who on St. George's Day said, I know, let's paint the roundabout with a big red cross in the middle of it, and that will get everybody feeling patriotic and proud and get that sense of Englishness and... how we all love the place. We'll paint a red cross on it. And I tell you what, outside the school where there's a zebra crossing, we'll do the little red crosses on the white things. I don't know that many do, do they? Do they bother? Why don't they bother? So I wouldn't go with a red spray paint thing and start spraying around roundabouts. I don't know what the point... It's vandalism to that extent. It's not vandalism, but it's, you know, it's going to have to get washed off. But... When you make those kind of comparisons between a council willing to do the crossroads for the LGBT pride marches, but not for something like St. George's, that gives you a sense of where patriotism is in this country and it's not particularly high on the agenda. It's all a bit uncomfortable, as Ava was suggesting. 0345 606 0973. Come to your calls on that in just a few moments. Plus...
There's no way William and the family will move in there. It will still be Monarchy HQ, but now Charles has already started opening up more to the public. That will definitely continue.
Prince William and Kate have decided to make their forever home a lovely little tiny place, 8 bedrooms, 5 bathrooms, veranda and balcony, outside Windsor and not Buckingham Palace. And it turns out from various sources that not many of the royals like living there. So there's a question mark raised over, well, what is Buckingham Palace going to be for? Get into the details after the 8:31 news headlines on LBC. Dominic Ellis.
Several councils in England are poised to take legal action to try and remove asylum seekers from hotels in their areas. It follows the High Court granting a temporary injunction yesterday blocking migrants from lodging at the Bell Hotel in Epping. Official figures show the rate of inflation rose to 3.8% in July, up from 3.6% the previous month. The Office for National Statistics says the cost of food, fuel and airfares all increased. And NATO leaders are expected to hold a virtual summit later to discuss security arrangements for Ukraine in the event of a peace deal with Russia. The White House says the Russian and Ukrainian leaders are preparing to meet, but the Kremlin has pushed back on the idea. LBC weather, cloudy across central and eastern areas. Sunny spells with patchy cloud elsewhere. Highs of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
How will you react if you win big with Win Plus?
I can't believe it!
Enter now at winplus.co.uk to get in the draw. 18 plus GB only, T's and C's apply.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well? You're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals, verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
Here's Helen in Manchester this morning. Tom, having spotted a painted roundabout in my town this morning, it's sad that during the recent Women's Euros, I didn't see a single home or business other than that of my own with a St George's flag up. It's nothing to do with patriotism, says Helen. Well, what's it got to do with then? Mike's in St Helens. Mike.
Hi, good morning. First time caller. I don't want to get into the rights and wrongs of painting the flag on roundabouts, etc., but just had a thought on the way to work as I hit a massive pothole. Why don't we put the St George's cross on the potholes and then the council will come along after a day or two and repair them?
Well, if they're going to do it for the roundabout where they don't like the red paint, I mean, I guess that's one way of doing it. Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Yeah, just a thought. And as I say, I don't want to get into the rights and wrongs of it, but I just...
Well, you are, sir, because you're going around. Yeah, you're now driving back to that pothole in your three-wheeled vehicle to go and spray it with this across the St George. You think that they'd come down in it like a ton of bricks? That would finally get them out to do it.
It's got to be worth a try, hasn't it?
Would you put a flag on your lamppost to celebrate your country, Mike?
Yeah, it wouldn't bother me.
Doesn't bother you at all. You don't understand why they're taking them down.
I think at the end of the day, it's a personal choice. Obviously, you see flags hanging out of windows, etc., etc. Yeah. Doesn't bother me one way or another.
I was in Northern Ireland a few weeks ago, and there was a flag from every lamppost, pretty much. Certainly in... I went for the Gulf, so we were in Portrush. And there was a... And I know it's marching season, so there were marches going through the town, but you'd never get that on the mainland, as it were, I don't think.
No, I think years ago you did, when we had... like more public celebrations, jubilees, street parties, etc., etc. But I don't think you see that as much now.
Not for a bleak Wednesday. You know, if it's not a royal occasion or a national moment of celebration, just having a lamppost, a sea of flags on lampposts, just for a wet Wednesday isn't really the done thing. It's very American, I think.
Well, most things are getting that way now anyway, aren't they?
That's the problem, Mike. We need to de-Americanise. Thank you very much indeed for the call. Mind how you go with those potholes. Matt, I'll come to your call in just a few moments. First... this is proper, isn't it? Absolutely fantastic. The changing of the guard as seen outside Buckingham Palace. But we're told that being inside it and having to live there is bleak, drafty, and I'll quote here, like camping in a museum. As Prince William and Kate decide that their forever home is going to be somewhere outside Windsor, there's a question mark being raised about the future of Buckingham Palace. Hugo Vickers is a royal historian, broadcaster and author. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme, Mr. Vickers. What seems to be the problem with Buckpal?
Well, a lot of people, of course, don't
live in their offices. And Buckingham Palace obviously is the place where you need to entertain people, receive heads of state, all that sort of thing, because the rooms are fantastic, the location is great. But as for living there, it's rather like living in a sort of large Edwardian hotel in Brighton. I mean, the Queen and Prince Philip lived along, right along one corridor on the Constitution Hill side. And, you know, if one of them came out into the corridor, it was a bit like coming out of your hotel room. So it's really not much fun. Whereas, of course, the present King lives at Clarence House, which is absolutely lovely, has a nice garden. Unlike Buckingham Palace Garden, it's not overlooked. So I can see the logic of living in the one place, very, very close by the way, and using the other for the more formal affairs.
Do we need the whole thing for those formal affairs? If there's corridor, I've never been inside, I've only been in the garden. If there's corridor after corridor of room and restorative places to go and relax, are they needed?
Yes, they are, because the rooms at the back overlooking the garden are the state rooms, you know, sort of drawing rooms. There's a big ballroom, of course, where they do investitures, where they used to do investitures. They do mostly investitures at Windsor Castle now. And of course, there are a lot of offices. Of course, it's hollow in the middle, as you know. It's a sort of square. And so it's not actually probably really as big as it looks. And of course, what the present King is doing a lot of is making the royal residence is more available, opening them up. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if he didn't open Buckingham Palace more and letting us see more of the rooms. He's already doing that. And I mean, that, again, of course, would be interesting.
Is it, to your mind, still the principal royal residence?
It's the principal royal office.
Heck of an office, though, Hugo. And listen, I don't know what's happening to me, really, but as I get older, I find myself becoming much less of a monarchist. And I sort of wonder whether there's, you know, whether it's becoming even more slightly anachronistic to have this huge, great big office in the middle of central London that not very many people like, masses, tens of millions to the upkeep of which, and no one really likes it.
Well, you know, the thing about the monarchy is people sometimes are saying, oh, well, what do we need the royal family for? The royal family actually do an incredibly good job. And the great advantage of a monarch is that he or she is above politics. They are representing this country. They are trained from birth. And they have a lot of sort of power invested in them, which they will never use, which prevents other people from using it. It's a very good system. You might not invent it, but since we've got it, do let's preserve it, because I think it's really important. And I mean, you know, when you look at the number of people who come to this country to witness, and indeed our own countrymen witness state occasions and big events and things, they love it. It's very important. They do a good job.
Hugo, thank you very much indeed. Hugo Vickers is a royal historian, broadcaster and author. It's 188 years since Buckingham Palace became the principal royal residence, but it isn't clear that many of its occupants actually liked living there. During his reign, King Charles has remained at Clarence House, while a £369 million refurbishment job continues at the palace. Now, there are offices there, and the people that support the royal family go in there and work there. That would be a great place to work when they're having your office in Buckingham Palace. But if they're not going to live there because they're going and living in another palace or another bit of the royal estate, is there a question mark over its future? Chris is in Worthing. Chris?
Good morning.
Hello, sir.
Hello. Well, I think we've got a solution to a big problem.
Okay.
The big problem is that the Palace of Westminster is crumbling down. They've beautifully redone the exterior, but we all know now from all the talks in the Parliament that the place is falling down. So the obvious thing is for the King to allow the Houses of Parliament to move into Buckingham Palace. After all, Westminster Palace is still a palace. So all he's doing is exchanging one palace while the other palace gets completely made over and ready, perhaps even, dare I say, it's the 22nd century, for political life.
I mean, it's a lot of MPs to fit in. I think you'd have to spill out into the courtyard by the sound of it. I don't mind the thinking.
They could still use the extension on the other side of Westminster Bridge for their offices. They might have to allow, you know, the division bells to ring for 20 minutes instead of 15, so that they can get from those to Buckingham Palace. But I can see it. I can see why the royals don't want to live there. I mean, you're living in it's a big hotel with loads and loads of officials.
It's a big hotel that I can't pay to stay in, and I really want to pay. That's what you do. Chris, you've got it. You turn it into a hotel.
It could be MP's accommodation, then they couldn't claim expenses.
The De Vere Buckingham Palace. You can see it now. Little golf course, 9-hole golf course.
Well, I think you'd want to call it something like the Windsor Hotel. Or, Buckingham Palace, by Windsor Hotels.
Yes, okay, yes, I see. Listen, Chris, I just wonder whether it is forming part of a view that people have that the royal family broadly is becoming pretty anachronistic and distant. When you read that Prince William and Princess Kate, have moved into this place in Windsor, which is going to be there forever, a massive thing, but they've downgraded from a palace, and you think, oh, God, poor souls. Oh, no. Must be weird. They've downgraded from a palace to this sort of 9-bedroom monstrosity at the end. I just wonder whether it plays into people's sense that it's getting very... Is it not becoming more difficult to justify the amount of money that's being spent on the royal family? Or that the royal family themselves need to do a much better job, a more open job, more obvious job of just getting it a bit tighter? Do you know what I mean? Just reining in the spending... making the royal family a bit smaller in that sense, so that the ones that are really constitutionally important get the attention and the hangers-on don't. And maybe that would mean some palaces go to the way, or they open up into, hotels or flats or something, I don't know, big Wetherspoons. Now, there's a thought. 0345 6060 973 is the number. On the roundabouts that are being sprayed with red paint, Tom, vandalism, says Mark in Lee Green. What the hell are you talking about? The Americans have their flags flying from everywhere. Why are we not allowed to show patriotism? Banksy splurts some graffiti and the councils can't wait to spend money to protect it. That's another good idea. All you need to do... God, no, I don't know whether I should... I don't know whether I should say this. All you need to do on the roundabout is just write Banksy on it with your red paint and suddenly... You'll get flocks of tourists coming towards it. The council's not going to touch it. They're not going to wash it off at all. You put Banksy on it, it's there forever. Mark, I don't think we need to do the American thing of having flags. The idea of having a flag in every classroom, in front of which you stand at the start of every morning and pledge allegiance to it, I like understated patriotism, Mark, I'm afraid. 0345 6060 973. Coming up...
You want people to downsize if you want a bit more mobility in the market. This is not going to achieve that.
Talking of downsizing, the Chancellor, we're told, it is reported, ahead of the budget, is potentially looking at bringing in capital gains tax on the sale of your property. That could mean you are charged a rate of up to 24% on the value of your home. Good way of raising money? Get into the details after the 8:45 news headlines on LBC. Dominic Ellis.
Councils in England are preparing legal action to try and stop hotels in their areas housing asylum seekers. Official figures show the rate of inflation rose unexpectedly to 3.8% in July. And children who vape are significantly more likely to go on to become smokers, according to a landmark review. LBC weather, sunny spells for most, some cloud for central and eastern areas, highs of 23 degrees.
LBC travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays in Clapham because the A3, Clapham Common North side, is closed northbound at Jedburgh Street. And that's because of a fire, so it's very busy on the approach. Slightly better news on the A2 westbound at the Kidbrook interchange. A car broke down earlier. It has been recovered, but there are still delays of about 45 minutes back to Bexley. In Crayford, Thames Road remains closed eastbound because of the emergency repair works after that large oil leak last night. And in Chislehurst, Centre Common Road is closed both ways following an accident. On the trains, Greater Anglia services are suspended via Cheshunt and no Stansted Express services running. It's because of an ongoing investigation. But the Metropolitan line's back up and running, but with severe delays.
This is LBC.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. Drop up on island fuel. Rest every 2 hours too. I inspect all your pressure and tread. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. Oh, yes.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
LBC.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv. Offer ends 27th of August.
You've arrived. Your dream holiday. You got there for less thanks to comparing flight prices on Kayak. An idyllic local restaurant nestled in the cliffs. A peaceful pool with your own private sunbed. This is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare flight prices from hundreds of travel sites and bag a great deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
£1.49 at McDonald's gets you a mini Oreo McFlurry. £1.49 on a big night out gets you...
Sorry, no trainers.
McDonald's Save a Menu. Actually get your money's worth. From 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well? You're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals, verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
I've learned a lot about resilience.
Really the importance of hard work and application, I'd say.
I came here so insecure and really unaware of like my talents and stuff.
Refresh your learning at Rochester Independent College. Whether you're heading into the last year of A-levels or GCSEs, or retaking exams with small class sizes and a focus on your success and top university entry, switch on to the idea of switching to Rochester Independent College.
I've gone from probably a straight C, D to A star, AA, A-level. And it's incredible.
For interviews or campus tours, search Rochester Independent College online today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Text 84850.
8:49 the time. I make no apology for it. After the news at 9 o'clock, I do want to talk to you about tax. Okay, I know there's this tax flying season because ahead of the budget, there's always speculation about what the Chancellor is going to do. But man, there are some controversial plans coming up. Rachel Rees is drawing up plans to hit the owners of high-value properties with capital gains tax when they sell their homes. This is part of the attempt, we're told, to fill a £40 billion hole in the public finances. That would mean, in theory, and I say in theory, heavily caveated because it's not definitely going to happen, that if you're a higher rate taxpayer, you'd have to pay 24% of the value of any gain from the sale of your property. If you're a basic rate taxpayer, you would pay 18%. So hang on, so you're paying for the sale and the purchase. So you're paying tax on the purchase and the stamp duty plus this. Cannot be right. Surely this isn't going to happen. That would be catastrophic. Matt's in Birmingham before we get to that. You want to talk flags, Matt? Hi.
Yeah, let's talk flags. So the council has said to all these people sticking the flags up, we're going to rip your flags down. So what they've done, they've gone and protested, silently protested and painted them on the island. So, you know, I thought this country were, you know, they allowed calm and collective protesting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that's my thought on it. You know, they've done it nicely. What's the issue? Why can't the council go around and put the flags up themselves and make it so they're, you know, supporting the nation?
Well, what about the converse of that, perhaps, not to say that they're diametrically opposed, but the people who want the Palestine flag flying from every lamppost, why shouldn't they be able to do that?
Why not? Why don't we have a collective of them? You know, the European Union, outside their offices, they have, like, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 flags. Why not do that?
Yeah, but that's on flagpoles, isn't it? That's on flagpoles outside. It's not on every lamppost in Brussels.
You know what I'm getting at. You know what I'm getting at, Tom. And in regards to people who look at it as being a far right, and that they're saying, oh, well, we should take the flag back and make it a peaceful entity. Why not? Why not allow us to do this now? You had the protests outside the Epping Hotel, and that they were peaceful majority of the times. It was the odd occasion from left and right, but... Why not take it back? Why not re-advertise it out as being a peaceful flag, being there for the good of people?
Well, I would then like to see Birmingham Council fly the flag. I don't know whether they do fly the flag from their offices or something. You know,
yes, why, they should.
It doesn't have to be on every lamppost, because not everybody would want it on every lamppost. And
I saw my daughter's school. Well, yep. my daughter's old school. They had the Union Jack, and they had every flag. Every time there was a holiday, there was a celebration. They flew the flag at that celebration. Why not do that at the state-run schools as well? When there's a holiday, when there's a celebration, fly. When there's not a different celebration, fly the England flag or the United Kingdom flag. Be proud of it.
Do you think, Matt, that this is an example of just a squeamishness or a lack of pride in this country?
My wife's the same. My wife, she says, oh, you know, it promotes thuggish, it promotes, you know, fighting and racism. I say that's where we need to change it, because call me racist, call me a bigot, I don't care. I respect my flag, I respect my country, and I respect everyone who lives here and pays their taxes, whether you're black, white, brown, unicorn, whatever you want to be.
All right, Matt, appreciate it. Thank you very much. I have to say, for the last Euros, well, we did it for the women's Euros, stick the thing on the car. For the last Euros, went all out. There were St George's flags hanging out the bedroom window. There were one on each car, it was all over the door. Went crazy for it. Loved it. Love all that. Particularly for an England summer football tournament. Absolutely go for it. So, but I understand there's a degree of squeamishness about it, because I do think there's an understated form of patriotism that is not uniquely British, but is part of that patriotism of this country. So every lamppost adorned with an English flag, because to not do so would to be somehow deeply unpatriotic. I don't particularly like that, if I'm honest. I don't like forced patriotism. Kyle's in Congleton. Kyle.
Hi, Tom. I was just picking up on the Buckingham Palace story.
Yes.
And obviously, if the royals aren't going to be living there, obviously we need an economic boost as well as a country, as everybody all knows. Why can't we open it up to like a museum-like kind of business? You get people obviously coming from all over the world to see the palace anyway. So if we've got some sort of museum part to it, you've got your money coming in there. You could even do like they're doing in other parts of the country where you've got some sort of tourist tax as well, because obviously the present people.
So you have the sort of So you have the kind of red roped off area of, oh look, this is where they go and have breakfast. This is where that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You're still preserving what it is, but you're opening it up, and obviously we're earning some money for it that obviously isn't there in the first place.
And you might get an extra bonus, because as you walk past the breakfast bit, there's the king sitting having his toast, wondering who all these people are filing past, you know.
Well, yeah, you might do that, but by the sounds of it, he doesn't want to be eating his toast in there, because there's other parts of the estate.
It's amazing, really. I mean, I'm reading in the Telegraph, big piece on it today, of lots of royal historians saying it's incredibly bleak in there. It's very cold. Someone's saying it's very bleak in so many ways. The Queen didn't want to go there, but Churchill made her. Didn't know that. It's incredible. Forced to go and live in a palace.
Well, I think what you said about, I think one of the quotes was, it feels like being in a sleeping in a museum-like building. Well, you know, I mean, most museums, if you go around, obviously are of an age. So if it feels like that, then why not make parts of it like that? I know we can't open all of it up, because obviously, as you quite rightfully said, there's offices there and things like that. But sections of it, using your terminology, roping it off, you could bring people in. People from all over the world would surely come. It's one of our biggest attractions. It's a no-brainer for me, really.
It's got National Trust written all over it, I'd have thought. You can have an overpriced cup of tea and a bit of cake as well. Carl, thank you very much indeed. Leslie's in Selby. Back to flags. Leslie, it's all patriotism, whether it's Buckingham Palace or flags, Leslie. Fire away.
Good morning. I spent quite a long time in Florida off and on, and all my neighbours had a flagpole all flying stars and stripes.
Yes.
And being a Yorkshire lass, I said, oh, I can get a Yorkshire flag for my flagpole. They said, you can put whatever flag you want, but you must have the stars and stripes first, America first. And I must admit, I don't know whether that's the same for the whole of the United States, but that's what it was in Hernando County in Florida.
Do you like that attitude, Leslie? Do you
I did like that attitude. Yeah. I really did.
You like the public display regularly of, quote, patriotism?
Well, if the Americans swear by it, they're doing a lot better than we are. I think you should have the choice, but I think it should, whatever flag you fly, we should have either the Jack or the St George's first.
Do you have a flagpole in Selby?
No.
Would you
not
want
in my
one?
Garden? Not in my garden in Selby. No, but I did in Florida because everybody did.
Would you want to have a flagpole so you could fly the cross of St George or something? Would you want that?
I could quite happily do that, and I'd like the one for Yorkshire on it as well.
Okay, Leslie, fine. We're going county by county now. Thank you very much indeed. Richard's in Finsbury Park. Richard.
Hi, Tom. Well, you mentioned one idea yourself, because you mentioned the idea of turning it into a big hotel. And, of course, Charles has told us several times that diversity makes us stronger. People all over the country are protesting about migrants in their communities and hotels. And I just think it'd be a wonderful way. If you think back to the way the royals sort of lost touch after the death of Diana, they had to show that they sort of... they felt our pain.
Yes.
And this is rather a similar story. They could show that they feel our pain and they're sharing this issue with us by opening up places like Buckingham Palace as a nice new hotel for some of the people who are waiting to be processed.
I think there would be a degree of outrage, Richard.
I'm being slightly sarcastic.
Oh, are you? Okay.
But I mentioned one thing. I don't know if you know this, but the King owns lots of shoreland around the UK, large parts of the Welsh coast, for instance. Now, more practically, there is a precedent, Tom, because the King has apparently already given Ed Miliband some of this land.
Right.
For wind farms.
Yes.
So he's happy to get involved in politics on the quiet with something that suits him. So,
well, I don't think he's given it. I think there's been a bit of money changing hands. I don't think it's quite been handed over so that we can build offshore wind farms on it. But he's definitely he's an eco warrior, the King, to some extent. I think he does. Does he still shake the branch of a new tree that he's planted, or he gives it a tap to say good luck to it, or something? He talks to trees. I mean, it's very nice in a way. Richard, thank you very much indeed. Here's Tom. Just driving down the A2, listening to you on the way to work, as we always do. You start talking about flags. We notice that every bridge from Rochester to London has a Union Jack on it. They weren't there on Monday. Huh. Well, maybe it's part of this protest/patriotic movement. Tom, thank you very much indeed. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. After the news...
it's effectively a mansion tax, which has often been raised and floated in this country by Ed Miliband and by Vince Cable and others, and now it's rearing its head again.
Reports this morning that the Chancellor are drawing up plans to hit the owners of high-value properties with capital gains tax when they sell their home. How popular is that going to be? Also...
this is really something very different from CCTV, and we need proper laws in place to protect us.
Facial recognition is going to be brought in by the Met Police at Notting Hill Carnival as Sir Mark Rowley warns his officers not to be caught dancing on the streets when the carnival takes place over the bank holiday weekend. Is that an event that, if you've been to it for many years, you would describe as safe?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, a security minister has told LBC the government is looking at contingency plans to house migrants who will be moved out of a hotel in Essex. It follows the granting of a temporary injunction yesterday stopping asylum seekers from lodging at the Bell Hotel in Epping. Several councils in England are now considering similar legal challenges. The Home Office Minister Dan Jarvis has told Tom the government is actively trying to phase out the use of hotels.
Under the previous government, there were over 400 hotels. That number is now down to just over 200. That is still too high. But the way in which we will drive down that further, speeding up and making much more effective the asylum decision-making process.
Yes.
We inherited a massive backlog from the previous government. In the year or so of this government, we've increased that process by 116%.
Official figures show the rate of inflation rose to 3.8% in July, up from 3.6% the previous month. The Office for National Statistics says the cost of food, fuel and airfares all increased. Some 60,000 Israeli reservists are due to be called up in the coming days ahead of a planned offensive to occupy Gaza City. 1 million people are expected to be told to leave after new shelters are set up away from combat zones. Many of Israel's allies have condemned the action, but Israel's prime minister says the operation has to be carried out to remove Hamas. NATO leaders will hold a virtual summit later to discuss security arrangements for Ukraine in the event of a peace deal with Russia. The White House says the Russian and Ukrainian leaders are preparing to meet, but the Kremlin has pushed back on the idea. Children who vape are significantly more likely to go on to become smokers, according to a landmark review. Experts looked at every piece of research ever written on youth vaping and also found links to respiratory illnesses and substance abuse. Dr. Sue Golder is from York University, rather, and was involved in the study.
We found an association with vaping and smoking initiation. We found an association with substance use. Found that young people who vape are 20 to 36% more likely to be diagnosed with asthma. If they already have asthma, the vaping will make it worse.
And treatment for people living with type 2 diabetes is to undergo what's being called the biggest shake-up in a decade. The National Institute for Care Excellence is proposing more individual approaches and greater use of weight loss drugs. It's recommending the health service moves from a one-size-fits-all approach across England, Wales and Northern Ireland. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 7 at 91.81. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells for most, some cloud developing for central and eastern areas with highs of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
It's a chill summer's day. The twins are splashing in the paddling pool while Mrs. Thing puts her feet up. She's proper chuffed, having saved money on a British Gas boiler service. Now just £69, down from £109, with a free British Gas membership. Bliss. Well, it was nice while it lasted. British Gas, taking care of things. T's and C's apply. Applies to first year of annual boiler service only and renews at standard pricing. Membership required. Available to new boiler service contract customers. Ends 9th of September. Service by 30th of September.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine the time. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC this Wednesday morning. Hope we find you incredibly well. It's not far off carnival season, but...
So what we're doing is introducing a new legal framework to make sure we can arrest wanted criminals, but also people can know that there's proper protection.
The use of facial recognition technology is going to be expanded. Today, the Met Police Commissioners hit back at the demands to drop its use, saying that it will make the event safer in a non-discriminatory way. If you head to that festival regularly, you like it, you love it, you enjoy it, can you really honestly say that it is safe?
Call 0345 60 60973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Morning to you first this hour.
This would be a big spanner in the works of a part of the housing market that has to be unlocked. If you want people to downsize, if you want a bit more mobility in the market, this is not going to achieve that.
Is nothing free from the clammy, desperate, clawing grasp of the state? Rachel Reeves is, we're told, reportedly in the pages of the Times, drawing up plans to hit the owners of high-value properties with capital gains tax when they sell their homes, as she attempts to fill a £40 billion black hole in the public finances. Yes, whatever number it is now. I mean, first it was 22, and then it's 30, and now it's 40, my God. The paper says higher rate taxpayers would have to pay 24% of the value of any gain from the increase in the value of their property. Basic rate taxpayers would pay 18%. The exemption from capital gains, known as private residence relief, would come to an end for properties above a certain threshold. They say although the threshold is subject of discussion in the Treasury, officials believe it could raise significant sums. A threshold of £1.5 million would leave about 120,000 homeowners who are higher-rate taxpayers facing potential capital gains bills of £199,000. Well, I guess that depends on what it was when they first bought it, and so the value, the amount of money that it makes on that sale. Not many homes are £1.5 million. The average home is £200,000-something. So this is only the people who have very sizable chunks of value in their property. But I can't think this is a good idea. I cannot believe that this would ever come in, not least because, ladies and gentlemen, on the 15th of June 2024, one Sir Keir Starmer absolutely guaranteed that imposing capital gains tax on the sale of people's homes would not happen. And he's not a man to go back on his word now, is he? Henry Pryor is a property expert. Thank you for coming on the programme, Mr. Pryor. I wonder what you make of these suggestions.
Tom, morning to you.
Morning.
This is a topic that I last spoke with Nick about back in November 2022. We can easily split it into two parts. Is it something that is likely to happen? Well, it's an Elvis is alive on the moon story. It isn't going to happen for a lot of reasons, some of which you've very eloquently outlined. The problem with it is that it will corrupt the market. It will remove one of the fundamentals of the UK housing market, and it would be incredibly difficult to implement. There would be people, crowds in Sloane Square carrying pitchforks, and I'm afraid it's not something that we are seriously expected to consider, contrary to the suggestions that we talked about yesterday, which I suspect will potentially come to pass. So that's a change on stamp duty, that's a change on council tax. But on this specific issue, there is a second side to the story, which is that fundamentally there is a massive issue here, which if we were starting from scratch, devising a tax policy for this country, would not exist. You may be aware that there are a number of things that the Treasury effectively allows us or forgives us when it comes to tax. For example, VAT on children's clothes or on food. But the biggest exemption that the Treasury allows us, for reasons lost in the mists of time, is the exemption from capital gains tax that is paid by second homeowners, landlords, investors, people with country cottages on the North Norfolk coast, when it comes to them disposing of their properties, which doesn't apply to people's primary or principal primary residence. And that total, Tom, is an eye-watering £30 billion. Now, you quite rightly are sceptical about what, you know, how big is the hole. It's a sort of almost a running joke, politicians looking into a fiscal black hole. But at the end of the day, the reason we talk about it every two or three years is because the Treasury, when they're looking at ways of trying to plug that hole, whatever its size, this is a very obvious target, even though once you actually get into it, by the time you get to 11s, an hour after you started the conversation, you all accept that it would be impossible to enact and we might as well think of something else.
I'm not picking you up on a semantic difference here, Henry, but I just maybe it's a mindset thing. You described there the kind of the areas where the Treasury allows us to avoid various forms of tax, whether it's VAT on food or children's clothes or what have you, and then allows us not to pay capital gains tax on the sale of our first properties or our only properties. And I just think, why? You know, I'm not being allowed. They're not allowing me to do this. A private individual sells a piece of private property to another private individual. Get out of my way, state. I don't need you in it at all.
Well, that's the reason why you're sitting where you are and why your audience, like me, listens to you every morning. It's a great conversation to have. It's one we can have in the pub. But the same rules seem to apply if you sell stocks and shares. Same rules apply to other capital gains you make. And one of the big issues with the current way that we tax capital gains on property is that if you are fortunate enough to sit in an expensive house, for the sake of argument, within the M25, then there have been times in the past 10, 15 years where the value of your property is rising at a rate that is the equivalent of another salary earner or wage earner in your house. And if you spend the next 12 months in your property and it goes up by £100,000, you'll pay no tax on that. But if I work my butt off trying to earn £100,000 in the next 12 months, I'll pay probably near 50% on that. And it's this disparity, given also the change in electoral demographics. Remember, there are 8 million people who rent properties out there who are probably going to be smiling at this sort of initiative because, of course, it's an easy way for them not to have to shoulder the burden. But it is going to be something that it merits conversation and discussion, but I'm afraid it's not going to come to pass.
Henry, thank you very much indeed. Henry Pryor is a property expert. 11 past nine, Andrew Lillico is Executive Director and Principal of Europe Economics and a columnist at The Telegraph. Thanks for coming on, Andrew. Keir Starmer promised this won't happen, so is it going to happen?
Well, I think that they are pretty desperate to get tax from any source
at all. And one of the advantages of taxes on property is that properties can't run away. You've seen in the past couple of years that some of the attempts to tax the richer people have tended to result in richer people leaving the UK. We've now had more. We've got the most millionaires in the world, even the UK, even China, even more than China these days.
Reportedly.
And the thing about taxing property is that it's the property's there, and you get something. And for example, if people would sell up and go, then at least you can take some money from them at that point. So I would have thought that there's actually quite a decent chance that they will try to do this. I think it's a terrible idea, but that doesn't mean just because something's a terrible idea doesn't mean that this government isn't going to do it.
Why is it a terrible idea, Andrew? Just run through for people. Why is it such a bad idea?
Well, I think it's a terrible idea in principle for some of the reasons that you were alluding to there. I mean, if I tax, the idea of a capital gain tax is that I'm taxing an investment that you make on which you secure some income. Whereas if it's my primary residence, that's the monies that I pay for that are more akin to a flow for something I'm continuously consuming. So it's more like a rent, mm-hmm. only because this is where I live. So it isn't at all the same kind of a thing as a capital gain. You're then taxing people on just living in a place at all, which is a completely different sort of a principle from a capital gains tax of other sorts. It's also, you're going to create tremendous distortions in the housing. I mean, things like stamp duty has already created enormous distortions with the prices all grouping just around and just below the numbers. Whatever threshold they set, you'd find that you get enormous distortions in the housing market around that. And I think it'd be very hard to put any kind of taper, otherwise you're going to end up with enormous numbers of people captured. In order to raise serious money, you're probably going to have to do it something like 500,000 as your threshold. So it's not going to be the average house, but I don't think it wouldn't be at unreachable levels of house price. So I think you'd end up with quite a lot of tax imposed on quite mm-hmm. a lot of people, and it would be quite a significant shift in principle from the way the capital gains taxes have been in the past.
Andrew, appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on. Andrew Lillico is Executive Director and Principal of Europe Economics and columnist at The Telegraph. I do sort of share Andrew's worry that the finances of this country are so imperiled, things are so difficult and tight for the Chancellor when it comes to any spare cash she's got lying around, which has been wasted on paying down Britain's debt, and the cost of that debt has increased, that almost anything is on the cards to be taxed now. I mean, they are, much to the apparent irritation of the pensions minister yesterday who came on the programme, who said it was I was talking total twaddle or something, or absolute rot or whatever the phrase was, I was merely pointing to him towards his government's own announcement that your unspent private pension pot is going to be rolled into inheritance tax in April 2027. Another way of dragging more money out of you, this time as you enter the ground. And here, on the sale of your property, your only property, the thing that you live in, a chance that you'll be charged capital gains tax to the tune of 24% if you're a higher rate taxpayer on any value that you have gained from the sale of that property, and 18% if you're a basic rate taxpayer. Massively, massively unpopular, hugely controversial, possibly terminal for the churn in the property market, but I wouldn't rule it out completely. 03456060973. We need to find more ways of raising money. Clearly growing the economy isn't something that Labour in their first year in power seem much able to do. So they're going to go for taxing again. And the fairest way of doing that, in my view, is you've got to have to tax wealth now. We're done with income. You cannot keep coming after working people in this country more and more and more. Every time the alarm goes off to get you out of bed at 5:30 in the morning to get in the van or go wherever you're going, you feel like you're doing it for HMRC rather than for any other reason. So you can't hit workers anymore, so you're going to have to hit wealth. Is hitting the wealth that you accrue through the sale of your property even before you die, is that a reasonable way of doing it? 03456060973 is the number. Coming up,
this is really something very different from CCTV, and we need proper laws in place to protect us.
11 anti-racist and civil liberty organisations have written a letter to the boss of the Met telling him to scrap the use of facial recognition technology that's going to be brought in at Notting Hill Carnival. The head of the Met says no. Details after the 9:16 news headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A Home Office minister has told LBC the government is looking at contingency plans to house migrants who will be moved out of a hotel in Essex. Official figures show the rate of inflation rose to 3.8% in July. And children who vape are significantly more likely to go on to become smokers, according to a landmark review. LBC weather, sunny spells for most, cloudy for central and eastern areas, highs of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the A2 westbound up to the South Circular Road at Eltham. There are delays of about half an hour. And also the problems continue on Upper Thames Street in both directions to Cannon Street Station. And that's all down to an accident. There are queues back to Blackfriars Underpass and also back to Tower Hill. In Chislehurst, Centre Common Road remains closed both ways. That's causing delays. And in Crayford, Thames Road is closed eastbound for emergency repair works. And that's also causing delays on the approach. On the train, London Overground's Mildmay line is suffering with severe delays between Stratford and Richmond and also up to Clapham Junction. It's all down to a signal failure. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Metropolitan line.
This is LBC.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, tap upon island fuel. Rest every 2 hours too. I inspect your pressure and tread. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
LBC.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with a McDonald's side mission. Do you A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to say everything in English, but louder.
4 beers, please, garçon!
Just like when you amplify your advertising with radio. 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
This bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus duty only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv. Offer ends 27th of August.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
9:19 the time. Please don't accuse me. Please don't accuse me of being unfairly political here when I suggest that because Keir Starmer said something won't happen, there might be a chance that it will. I mean, it's a bit of a track record, I'm afraid, of the Prime Minister's of saying he'd do one thing and then it either happening or not happening. So when Keir Starmer said over a year or so ago now that there would be no way that they would impose capital gains tax on the sale of people's homes, he said it was a desperate tactic from the Tories to suggest that he would do it. He could absolutely guarantee that it would not happen. Fast forward to today, front page of the Times, Rachel Reeves is drawing up plans to hit the owners of high-value properties with capital gains tax when they sell their homes. Well, might be some kite flying, might be some pre-budget checks to see what the public is warmed up for, as numbers 10 and 11 sometimes do. This would be a disaster. And it would be so unpopular as to, I think Henry Pryor might be right to say that people would take to the streets about it. John's in Liverpool. John.
Yeah, hi Tom. I had to phone up today because I've been listening to this for the last couple of days now, with the talk about abolishing stamp duty, yes, and hitting people for sales tax. But Rachel Reeves, I think she needs to go back to economic school. This is absolutely ridiculous. She's going to damage the housing market. There's so many questions that I've got on this because I don't know how they're going to come up with this. Are they taking into consideration your interest that you've paid on the capital gains and the profit you've made? Because if you buy a house for, you know, 350,000 and sell it for 500,000, it's not cost you 250,000. If you've had the house for 25 years, you've paid all the interest as well. And I just don't know where they're coming up with this. It's just, to me, it's another desperate plight at trying to raise more money for the economy, but yet having, you know, putting the housing market at risk, because all that's going to happen is you're going to increase demand because people aren't going to be selling.
When did you buy your house, John?
I bought my house about... Well, I've had a few houses, but the one I'm currently in now, I've owned for about 10 years.
What did you buy it for?
I bought it for 300,000.
Okay.
And I've done a lot of work to it. We've put big extensions on everything. Lovely. Else. It's probably worth about 620 now.
Whoa! You've doubled it.
Yeah, but that's...
Wow!
But it's not more than double it, because I've been paying interest on that property, so it's not...
Yeah, but you wouldn't have been able to buy it in the first place if you hadn't taken out a mortgage. So that's the transaction you make. You sign up for paying interest on your mortgage to be able to afford the property, otherwise you wouldn't get the loan.
Yeah, but that's an expense on my behalf. But you choose to do that
because you wanted to buy the house.
That's correct. But if you're looking at business economics and, when you're working out the profit that you've made, you take into consideration the expenses that you've put into that.
So you get... I'm going to buy your house from you, John, and I'm going to take your word for it, £620,000. Okay, I'm a cash buyer, thanks very much. £620,000 to your bank account. You keep the profit, and you say you're mortgage-free.
Yeah, been 2.5 years, yeah.
You've done nothing to earn that additional wealth.
Well, no, I have.
No, you haven't.
When you say I've done nothing, I've worked my fingers to the bone. Over the COVID period, when my business was earning no money for 3 years and I was beg, stealing and borrowed to pay the mortgage, was HMRC helping me out at that point? When I was
sorry, you fell off.
The house?
You've realised this value that has now been realised in cash terms because I bought your house. The state wants some of that. You haven't earned that money. That is wealth that is unearned wealth,
earned,
John. Give it to me. Give me the money. I'm the state. Give me the money, John.
So if the house hasn't gone up in the same value for another area, so say, for example, I'm from sort of North London, I'm just in Liverpool on business at the moment. But if a house hasn't risen at the same equity that it has in London, my expenses and living expenses in London and what I have to pay for in London... Well, how can you say don't live in London when all your family are from London and everything else?
Well, don't live in London. I work in London, don't live there.
And what's going to happen now is by putting this tax on and abolishing the stamp, there's no problem with stamp duty. If you want to buy a house and you've got stamp duty, that you can easily, for the sake of £18,000-£20,000 and you're a first-time buyer, you can roll that into the mortgage anyway.
All right. John, thank you. Good luck with selling the house as and when the time comes. Thank you very much indeed for the call. Mick is in Titchfield in Hampshire. Mick.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hello, Mick.
Probably going to duplicate some of what the other guy said. So I bought my house 20 years ago, and let's say I bought it for £100,000, and it's worth £200,000 now. Now, I built two extensions on that. So let's say they're £50,000. So you'd pay the difference between what you bought the house for plus extensions, because on improvements, because I also have properties that I rent out, and when I sell them, the improvements, not maintenance, are tax allowable. So how is anyone going to prove? Who keeps their bill to go when you have the extension done? So there's going to be arguments about what was the value of those, what was the cost of building those extensions?
But the reality is that you built those extensions and the value was realised in you living in it. You got to live in that house.
Yes.
So you chose to spend money on paying for an extension, which you like, and you like living in it. It then increases the value of your house to a greater or lesser amount, depending on the market at the point at which you sell. That's your decision. You don't need any tax relief on that as and when you're charged capital gains on the sale of your property.
At the moment, you get tax relief on it, Tom. So if they use the same formula as a second property, irrespective of what you bought the property for or what you sold the property for, any improvement,
Mick, we lost it. We tried. Better invest into a phone line. Thank you very much indeed. Michael's in Ipswich. Michael.
Yeah, I think the question we've got to start looking at, the government has got to raise taxes.
Yeah.
And the easiest way to get taxes from people is on property or assets. So the amounts of money, I hear, particularly the first gentleman, he came from London and the rest of it. The problem in London, and when the council tax first came in, say for argument's sake, you had a flat for 50 grand, you're still only paying the same council rate now as that period in time. The same flat might be £480,000. We have got to look at property because it's the only thing that the wealthy can be taxed on without them running off saying, we're going abroad, we're doing this, we're doing... You tax the area where the profit is.
What is meant by... what for argument's sake, Michael, what's wealthy?
Anything, truthfully, you've got to look at it in different areas. Like, I'm from the northeast of England. If you have a £500,000 house in the northeast of England, it is going to be quite substantial. It's easy going to be a four-bedroom house, plus garage, plus this, that, the rest of it. In London, in the southeast, it might only be a two-bedroom flat. But it's not the property, it's the value. And the way to do it for the government is if only time I have to pay it, say I've got a £500,000 house in the northeast of England, I'm going to sell it. And I'm going to be paying capital gains tax of 18% on it only when I sell it. Not before.
No, yeah.
But then the other issue was this. Same again with property. The Conservative Labour governments for the last 30 years have pussyfooted around council tax. The councils are desperate for money, but every single government has never revalued anything.
Yes, that does need... I would agree with you, Michael, that does need changing. It's very...
So how do you raise taxes then if you are not prepared to go for the people who can afford to pay it? And the people who can afford to pay it are predominantly people, say, in the southeast of England on a £700,000 house or above, or in my particular area on a £500,000 house or above.
But only if they sell it. So it's only if they sell the property do you realise that money, and they might not sell the property. So here's another idea.
London,
hang on a second, Michael, here's another idea. Angela Rayner plans to add £370 to rural tax bills, we're told. Middle-class families in rural areas face paying an extra £370 in council tax under Angela Rayner's plans. The County Council's network has warned that towns and villages will, quote, foot the bill for an overhaul of local finances. Basically, middle earners are going to pay more council tax to fund areas where they're going to pay less. Sorry?
Define a middle earner.
I don't know. Well, okay, so middle class, perhaps a better description, whatever that really means.
Okay, fine,
I'll give you more detail. Fine. A Band D countryside property will see their annual council tax bill rise to £2,756 by 2029, up from £2,380 today.
I pay just under £3,000 a year myself. So it's not a big figure. So you're saying it's 3,000. Say for argument that the council rate is £3,000.
Mm-hmm.
Let's stop saying working class, middle class and upper class.
Yes, I agree with that.
Just turn around and see what it really means.
Band
Have a look
D.
at a means income.
Mike, I think you're right. We need, the class bit, you can, I don't know what that really means. Middle class families in rural areas. Well, how do you know? How can you tell? What does it mean to be... Anyway... Band D countryside property will see their annual council tax bills rise to £2,756 by 2029. So that's an area that definitely needs review. Stamp duty definitely needs looking at. 100% it needs looking at. This idea of capital gains tax on the sale of your house. Forget it. No one wants it. No one needs it. There are other things to look at. Thank you for your call. 0345 606 0973 is the number. Coming up... Carnival time, and so the Met are out in force. It is, I think it's the biggest policed event across the whole of Europe happening around Notting Hill in the next few weeks. Mark Rowley, the boss of the Met, ruling out suggestions that they could ditch facial recognition technology. Is that a fair thing to use? I think probably so, isn't it? Get into the details. 9:30, news headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
A Home Office minister has told LBC the government is looking at contingency plans to house migrants who will be moved out of a hotel in Essex. It follows the granting of a temporary injunction yesterday, stopping asylum seekers from lodging at the Bell Hotel in Epping. Official figures show the rate of inflation rose to 3.8% in July, up from 3.6% the previous month. The Office for National Statistics says the cost of food, fuel and airfares all increased. And children who vape are significantly more likely to go on to become smokers, according to a landmark review. Experts looked at every piece of research ever written on youth vaping and also found links to respiratory illnesses and substance abuse. LBC weather, cloudy across central and eastern areas, sunny spells with patchy cloud elsewhere, highs of 23 degrees.
LBC.
When they're away at uni and the show you all love is on telly. When you're miles apart but still laughing at the same joke. When the emojis come thick and fast.
Ah, triple smiley face and a heart.
I knew they'd love that.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. Make sure your child has a TV license when they go to uni, so they're covered to watch all TV channels and you can still enjoy all those TV moments in the family group chat.
The holiday park industry is in the spotlight after thousands of holiday park homeowners lost what they...
You've heard it in the news. Holiday park homeowners being hit with sudden site fee increases, fake resale promises, and dramatic losses in the value of their holiday homes. The Holiday Park Advice Centre could help you get compensation if you were missold. Contact the Holiday Park Advice Centre today. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
9:32 is the time. Suzanne is in Westcliff-on-Sea in beautiful Essex. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, Tom. Hiya. I mean, what I've just on this, just by tuning in, is about us having to possibly, you know, homeowners, a tax on homeowners and profit, maybe something like that. Mm-hmm. In that relation, that okay. So I own my own house. My husband, he's the main worker. Works. I mean, I'll say it again. It's a cliche. Everyone's saying it. I work hard. Blah blah blah. But you know, okay. So we've been healthy. We've looked after our health as well. To, you know, to work hard. Okay. So what happens? Well, they're going to tax people in the future on being healthy. Okay, so you're so healthy that you can go out and work and earn, get a really good job so you can pay for a house that's worth $1 million now, okay? So are they going to tax... Are they... People think I'm crazy, but we've got the ability to do that. We're lucky. We've worked. We looked after our health, so we could do that. So is that going to be the next thing? Oh, you're too healthy because you're going to, you get your job's too good or your property's too big. We're going to tax you.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. But I sort of see the point that you're making, Suzanne, which is something that I think a lot of people feel at the moment, particularly, which is they can't leave their house without paying 50 quid. You know, it's almost like you're taxed as the minute you leave the front door every day. And that it's just becoming too much.
Well, it is because they're fine, because the government is, because the country is in such dire state of debt, whatever. They're trying to get money. You know, you can't cross the road without getting a fine. You can't. You know,
Is this or is this a narrative that's taken hold unreasonably and unfairly? And actually, if we compare ourselves to Scandinavian cousins, we're taxed at a lower rate than some of those countries.
Yeah, we are. But then, in those Scandinavian countries, they are, the tax is it's dreadfully expensive. But they've got a different way of life. It depends on the quality of life. You know, works in parallel to what they pay. You know, they're very most the happiest country.
Well,
you know,
that's
this
the point.
Country.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, Suzanne. That it's mm-hmm. not the necessarily the amount or the frequency with which you're taxed. It's the fact that people look around at what it's being spent on and say, "Well, what am I getting? What am I getting for all this money?" Yet they try to get the benefits bill down by a mere £5 billion. They couldn't do it.
Exactly, because there's too much. They owe too much money. It's just the whole thing's a mess. They need to tackle their accountants, get new accountants. But to aim this tax at homeowners and people who've worked hard for their properties. Okay, we're lucky, and I know
you haven't worked hard for the increased value. You haven't worked hard for the additional value because the market has moved up.
I have.
We have
because it's an investment. You do something, you invest. We bought this house.
Yes, but you're charged on investments. Any other investment you make, stocks and shares, you pay capital gains on it. Why not your property?
True. Well, because it's just... Well, it's a really good point. But the mortgage, we're still paying a mortgage, is just outrageous. You know, we don't get as many fantastic holidays.
Well, that's up to you. That's a choice you made. That is a choice you made.
Well, in order
it's like people who say, oh, I pay for private school, I'm not wealthy. No, you are. You are wealthy. If you
Oh,
no, Susanna, are we going on this?
I didn't pay for private. No, I didn't pay for. I don't believe in private schools. You know, we've got some really good schools where we live. They didn't go to private schools. All I'm saying is, if you bought a bit of jewellery and it was worth 10 times more, or a car, what about like a really nice vintage car, a car that appreciated in value? Okay, the same sort of thing. It's that things appreciate, and in line with inflation, etc., etc.
But there's, from the Treasury's point of view, there's so much money there. There's so much money there in the sale of people's homes, the value that they've accrued on it, that they could get it and they could spend it on people's welfare payments, and they could spend it on filling potholes that don't get filled, and they can give it to other nations. They could do loads with it that wouldn't actually maybe benefit. Suzanne, thank you very much indeed. Let's go to Carnival. Metropolitan Police Commissioner has hit back at demands to drop the use of live facial recognition cameras at this weekend's Notting Hill Carnival over concerns of racial bias and an impending legal challenge. Mark Rowley writing in a letter that the technology would be used at Europe's biggest street carnival in a non-discriminatory way, using an algorithm that does not perform in a way which exhibits bias. He was responding to a letter from 11 anti-racist and civil liberty organisations, disclosed in The Guardian, that urged the Met to scrap the use of the technology at an event that celebrates the African-Caribbean community. These organisations say that technology will only exacerbate concerns about abuses of state power and racial discrimination within your force. Rebecca Vincent is Interim Director of Big Brother Watch. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. I suspect, Rebecca, you oppose the use of this technology.
Oh, absolutely. So we oppose it as a matter of principle, and we oppose it specifically for the use at Notting Hill Carnival, which is why we've called on the Met to scrap its plans to use it next weekend.
Let's do the practical bit and the Notting Hill Carnival bit first, and then we'll get to the principle bit. So why are you concerned about it being used at this event?
Well, firstly, we're in a situation where we have literally no legislation governing the use of live facial recognition. So police have been left to decide for themselves how they use it, where they use it. They're compiling their own watch lists based on sometimes problematic criteria.
This
is the thing. Because there's no legislative basis for it, they're left to determine who belongs on their watch list. So we're concerned that there's categories of people there who have never been suspected of doing anything wrong or committing any crime. We have people like victims of crimes and missing persons. So it's not the case that it's just sort of looking for these supposed bad guys.
So the facial recognition technology can pinpoint, if they're on a list, someone who is a victim of crime?
So that's a category of people that we know, per the Met's published criteria, can be included in their watch lists.
But what happens? So the camera scans over the crowd, picks on someone's face. That person matches our database. They're a victim of crime.
If they're on the watch list. And the officer there on the spot won't necessarily know why they've matched. And that person might not know why they've matched. And so it can be quite distressing all around. There's also misidentification. We know of these cases. In fact, we're supporting a legal challenge in the case of Sean Thompson, who is a Black Londoner who was mis-ID'd by this. The High Court has given permission for that case to go ahead. So we're waiting for a judicial review hearing in January. So there's a number of reasons that it's sort of inadvisable for the Met to be rushing to use it in this way just now. We have no legislation. We don't even have the supposed governmental framework yet that the Home Secretary is promising. So why is there this rush to use it at events like Notting Hill Carnival and to roll it out further in the country? We just heard an announcement from the Home Office last week that 7 more police forces will now be getting this. Why the rush? We need safeguards, we need oversight, and we need accountability.
Mark Rowley, in his letter, I think, to you and other groups, said that the previous use of the technology at the Carnival in 2016 and 2017 did not build public confidence.
Oh, absolutely, it did not. So those were supposedly trials. There was widespread public outcry on the basis of bias and discrimination, and they scrapped it. Why they've chosen to bring it back now at this time, again, when we still don't have proper legal framework to govern this, is beyond us. Look, the tech has gotten better, it's improved, but they're acknowledging there's still this margin for bias that they're comfortable with. We're not comfortable with any bias.
Bias in what way, sorry? In what way does it display bias?
Well, first of all, the tech doesn't always get it right. We know, even though it's improved, that it's still less accurate for certain faces, for women, for people of color.
Also, the discrimination can work its way in through other ways. For example, the compilation of the watch list itself, the way that's done, can introduce a element of discrimination as well. And we've had wider accusations of bias in policing. And so there's many sort of levels where discrimination can work its way in. So to use it in this way at a cultural celebration like this, we feel is particularly sinister.
Sinister? Aren't they just trying to keep people safe? This event, well, unfortunately, has quite a lot of crime, knife crime. Indeed, there have been some cases of people losing their lives happening.
That's very serious, and nobody wants that, right? We all want police to be able to do their jobs and to get criminals off the street, but we don't think sort of this mass surveillance approach and compromising everybody's rights to get at the bad few in a way that hasn't actually proven terribly effective, it's not the way to do it. Turning this carnival into a police lineup is really quite shocking.
Rebecca Vincent is interim director of Big Brother Watch. Is that how you feel if you're going to go, one of the 2 million people, my goodness me, 2 million people who are going to go to carnival this weekend? You feel like it's a police lineup? Martin's in Canary Wharf. Martin.
I'm not really an advocate of police state and everything else, but the carnival has a history of knife crime, violence, murder. People are murdered. How many murders have there been over the years? So I'm afraid on this occasion, yes, facial recognition to weed out those troublemakers that are there for that purpose.
And if it's the case that one individual, or the individual that was referenced by our guest, Sean Thompson, may have been incorrectly, wrongly identified by the live facial recognition as a criminal, held by police and then faced demands from officers for his fingerprints, sort of so be it, or that's just an accident, or
do we say collateral damage? I mean, look, people say there are so many revelers there and there's only a few. I remember reading one woman saying, well, there was only one murder, and how many millions of people went through the place? Listen, the school that I went to, if somebody didn't own up to a wrongdoing or misbehaviour, everybody in the school was punished. Okay, so everybody's going to have to suffer.
So this is a punishment. It's a punishment to have live facial recognition because...
What I'm saying is because there are campaigners that want the carnival to remain as it is.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying about drawing the comparison with punishment, what I'm saying is that unfortunately all of the peaceful revelers will have to be inconvenienced or suffer because of the minority.
Well, I don't know that they need to suffer by having their liberty unfairly deprived. I mean, I guess it might be a form of suffering. Some would see it certainly as that if it got moved. If it was moved out of Notting Hill and moved to Hyde Park or something, I don't know, moved to a bigger area to accommodate 2 million people, because Sadiq Khan was quoted some time ago as saying that he saw some of the footage of the crowd crush that happened at Notting Hill Carnival, and he said it made him feel scared. Imagine being in it. Imagine having kids that are in it. Martin, thank you very much indeed. 0345 6060 973 is the number. Adrian's in Putney. Hi, Adrian.
Good morning.
Far away.
The points are really regarding taxes on homes.
Whoa, my God, what's happened in Putney? Are you OK?
It's terrible in Putney. House prices have totally collapsed. You can buy a five-bedroom house for 50p. You know, the points I'd like to make very quickly are, the gentleman who was talking about interest it is paid, but at the time he's got the house, OK, he's living in it, he's not paying a rent, is he?
No.
Which is OK, that's one point. The second point is the gentleman who's talked about the extensions and et cetera, the cost thereof, people do not keep the vouchers, and I can see the Inland Revenue being inundated with arguments how much an extension cost. I mean, it's absolute murder. The whole question is, it's going to have terrible shock on the building business and the buying and selling of houses. I don't think Miss Rees has understood a single thing what she's doing. It's very, very sad for the ordinary people in this country. And I mean, it's from top to bottom, more about the bottom. Anyway, I'll leave you in peace, sir.
No, I'll leave you. Thank you very much indeed. Adrian on his way around town. Thank you for the call. 0345 600 973, the number. 9:45, news headlines on LBC. Here's Dominic Ellis.
A number of councils in England are poised to take legal action to try and remove asylum seekers from hotels in their areas. Official figures show the rate of inflation rose to 3.8% in July, up from 3.6% the previous month. And a new apprenticeship programme is being set up in an effort to employ more people from working-class backgrounds into government. LBC weather, sunny spells for most, cloudy across central and eastern areas, highs of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the Upper Thames Street in both directions, heading towards Cannon Street Station. It's all down to an accident. There are huge delays both ways, and also in Chislehurst it's very busy because Centre Common Road remains closed both ways because of the emergency repair works. Also for emergency repair works, Thames Road in Crayford is closed eastbound at Perry Street, and that's causing delays back to Erith. Also delays on the Camberwell New Road in Kennington in both directions, and that's all down to the roadworks. On the underground, there are severe delays on the District line and no Windrush line able to run between Surrey Quays and Clapham Junction, and that's all down to a power problem.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Lewis Goodall.
The government ordered to shut down the Epping Asylum Hotel, with perhaps more to follow. Where are they all going to go?
Lewis Goodall on LBC.
Arenas full of fans. Stars taking it to another level. The excitement, the glory, the action. And you could be behind it all. Kickstart your career in esports with Global Academy's new esports production sixth form course. Get the skills and knowledge to join a fast-growing media industry. And you could even join Global Academy's own esports team. Thinking what next after GCSEs? Then find out more about the esports production sixth form course at globalacademy.com.
This is LBC.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Ever on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
4. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Hey, Mum. So, you know we met Zara, my financial advisor? Yeah, from St. James's Place. Well, she drafted our plan, so you can get that bungalow near me. Oh, and Sam, that lovely carer we found, will drop in. And I can bring over my signature shepherd's pie. Oi!
Big decisions call for invaluable advice. Visit St. James's Place to find your one-to-one financial advisor. St. James's Place Wealth Management PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. SJP approved 19th of Feb 2025.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
9:49 the time. Jennifer is in Kingston. You want to talk about carnival, Jennifer. Hi.
It's Kensington.
Oh, Kensington. I do apologise. I've got my K's and T's wrong way round. Your thoughts on it?
Good morning, Tom. I just arrived back from Guernsey last night. I'd been home for a couple of weeks. Whenever I go home in the summer, I always make sure I come back for carnival. My first carnival was in 1978. I arrived in London in 75, and I did know about it at the time. And I have never, ever missed a carnival. It's a highlight of my summer. Now, I'm sick to death of people saying, oh, the police shouldn't be doing this, the police shouldn't be doing that. I've never committed a crime in my life, And I'm quite happy for the police to come up with a camera and take my photograph to see if I've committed a crime, basically. I've got nothing to hide. Now, I've been going every single summer, and I've never seen anything. I've never seen anybody stab anybody. I've never seen anybody with a gun or a knuckle duster or anything. I have an absolutely fantastic time.
Well, I'm delighted to hear it.
I actually don't get home until about 2 or 3 in the morning on a Tuesday.
Dirty stop-out. Last year, there were...
76.
Wow, that's good going. If I can get to that by the time I'm 76, I'll be doing very well. Last year, were 349 arrests at Carnival, including for homicide, rape, possession of weapons and other violence and sexual-related offences.
That's a lot. I know, because I read the bad news after
that is
Carnival.
A lot.
Now, there's never good. There's never anything good that's printed in the papers after Carnival. They actually concentrate on these criminals who are doing harm to other people or doing harm to property or whatever. The only criminal thing I see is men, and they are disgusting. They are urinating everywhere. They're too lazy to go to the allocated toilets, and they will actually do it in the street in front of you. And that is the only criminal thing I ever see. I can walk the streets of Ladbroke Grove, which is like my second home, because all my friends live up there, and I have a fantastic time.
And you wouldn't mind the use of facial recognition, Jennifer Fine?
Yeah, I've got no problem with that. I think that should have happened years ago.
Well, only if the technology was there. Appreciate the call. Good luck. Enjoy it. Thank you very much indeed, and stay safe. Thank you for the call. Jeff's in Barnet. Jeff, back to the property tax.
Hello, hi. I'm walking the dog, so if it's a bit windy...
You know what? You sound like a fantastic line. That is crystal clear.
Oh, really? Okay, fine. Brilliant. I'll stop where I am now. So, three comments or observations. The first is mortgages and leverage. So, you know, the typical model for buying a home in the UK or in any... first world country is leverage, right? Unless you're really lucky to be able to afford something mortgage free. So if I'm a homeowner who has a 70% mortgage, say, okay, and I sell the house, I've got to pay back that 70% mortgage and then find an additional 24%, which is calculated presumably on the gross value, not on the net value minus the mortgage. It's on the increase. The increase will not, factor in the mortgage. I'm a buy-to-let landlord, so I know this.
Higher-rate taxpayers would have to pay 24% of the value of any gain from the increase in the value of their property.
Right. Yes. So it discounts the mortgage. Basically, you freeze the housing market. Who will sell if they have to put... This is the same argument I used for the BTL, but anyway, for raising the income tax rates to the marginal rates of 40% or whatever. Second point is cost. I think one of your other... Sorry, I've been walking the dog, so I haven't really listened. But, you know, I have... Say I do up my property, spend 100 grand on it, right? Does that £100,000 cost come off?
No.
Why? Why not?
Because you're living in it.
I spent that money.
Yeah, but you're living in
it. I'm paying the mortgage. That's the rent, as the other guy said. What about the cost of improvement?
No, but you live in that property. You're improving it for yourself. You're not improving it to make a profit on it. You're improving it for you. To live in, to have a nice time.
Okay, so the building industry is going to collapse, okay? Because it will. And
why?
Why
would it collapse?
The government... So I put 100 quid net income into building the property, and then you tax me on 24% gross. Doesn't make sense.
The reason you do your house up is not necessarily to increase the value of it. You do it because you get the benefit of living in it.
Yeah, I get that. But think about the knock-on effect of building trades and what have you. Anyway, third point is properties are wasting assets, right? If they're not upkept, they fall down. Now, that's analogous to wine and cars. Why is there no CGT on wine and cars? They are huge industries. There is no CGT on vintage cars because it's a wasting asset, and wine because it's a wasting asset. Why wouldn't they choose those as opposed to...
No money in it.
In the first instance, sorry?
Do it anyway
to show people. Do it anyway. I'm sorry. And listen, I've got vintage cars, right?
Ah.
So you can't come at me with... Yes, I do. I'm very fair. I just think that at the end of the day, right, it was my choice to buy a vintage car. It's complete luxury. I want to live somewhere. I want a home. I want to be able to trade up without necessarily, you know, in the most frictionless way possible. I just think the government's making a huge mistake, and I actually think it will be challenged on the wasting asset point, because you cannot put CGT on wasting assets unless they change the law with wine and cars. And I'd be very happy for another reader to prove me wrong, or your researchers.
We need another reader. Jeff, thank you very much indeed. Tour de force from Jeff. Here's Colin on WhatsApp. Tom, I've heard that you hate the elderly. Colin, I don't hate the elderly. I hope to be the elderly one day. Practically, if you go to my Instagram, tswarbrick1, you can see I was practically chased off the bus by the elderly yesterday. Paul's in Reading. Hi, Paul.
Hiya, how you doing?
Yeah, good, sir. Thoughts?
Right, okay, so I just want to put this out there in a way that it's easy for someone to understand. I'm not a wealthy man. It took me 2.5 years of working day and night to get £30,000 together to buy my first home. That's two solid years, day and night, and I'm not joking. Literally, every weekend, everything, to get the money together to buy my first home. If I had not have spent any money on my home would probably only be increased by £25,000. Uh-huh. That's it. Okay. I did not buy my home to make a profit. Okay. But we did buy it. We did put an extension on the back, and we've had to refurb the whole house, because uh-huh. The whole house was a refurb. Okay. So even if I did, so if you don't buy that house at a cheap price to refurb it to not get anything back. Yeah. So I get taxed on my wages that I've had to work my
yep.
butt off for.
Thank you.
Yeah. To put that extension on the back, which cost £40,000 to put it on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took me another 2 years to get that money together to do that, yeah? Who the hell have they got any right to take what I've worked my butt off
for yep.
off of me, yeah? I'm not rich.
Well, the answer is, Paul, I guess the answer... Listen, I don't agree with the answer, by the way, certainly not on your primary property, but the answer is what you have done to increase the value of that house has little or nothing to do with the money you've spent on it. That's market forces have been at play whilst you have been living in that house that you have had no control over and you've benefited from.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying. If I hadn't have refurbed it, which it was a refurb, that's why.
Yeah, so you get a bit more on it. Let's say you get a bit more on it.
It would be worth pretty much £25,000 more now than what it was 5 years ago when I bought it. But the other thing is, a lot of people in my position that are not wealthy, and I'm not wealthy at all. I work really hard, and I've worked really hard to buy my home.
Yep.
That's my retirement. And now they're going to take my retirement and tax it a bit more. It's a lot of people in my position. That is why they buy a property, because when they get to a certain age, they can sell it. They can take the luxury of taking a little bit of extra money from it mm-hmm. and downsizing mm-hmm. and leave themselves a little
well,
bit of money.
Well, that's where, Paul, I think...
And then they're about to now take that away, and I find that disgusting.
Well, I agree with you. I agree. This idea surely can't fly. It's not going to happen. There's no way that people are going to... I mean, it's a massive vote loser for millions and millions of people, not least... the principle of it, which I think is deeply unfair. And what you will end up getting, I suspect, is a lot of people sitting on their hands and waiting for the Labour government to fall and someone else to come in and do something rather different with it. Because I think you'll just gum up the housing market. Paul, I've got to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed for your call. Thank you for all your calls today. Back tomorrow at 7. If you missed anything, Global Player, please. It's the brand new LBC app. You can stay up to date on all the latest news and opinion, and the news categories can happen wherever you want them. Pause and rewind live radio. Listen to a range of podcasts as well. Download it for free from the App Store now. At 1 o'clock, Sheila Fogarty. Next, Lewis Goodall.
Thanks, Tom. Another day, another nightmarish dilemma for this government, this time at the hands of the High Court. A judge ruling on the basis of planning law that the migrant hotel in Epping should be closed. It could be overturned, of course, but as it is, the Home Office will have to find new accommodation for dozens and dozens of men currently housed there, at a time, of course, of acute housing shortage. Worse still, this result could end up being applied to other asylum hotels, with reform saying that in their areas, they're going to try and seek the same legal remedy. It really is a very simple question, it seems to me, this morning. If not hotels, if not in these places, where are all these people going to go?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
Britain Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. The government is bracing for more legal action over asylum hotels after a council in Essex secured a temporary High Court injunction. Epping Forest District Council argued public safety was being put at risk because of ongoing protests outside the Bell. It now has until the 12th of September to stop housing migrants following weeks of disruption. Conservative leader of Epping Council, Chris Whitbread, has told LBC he welcomes the ruling.
It's a decision that's the right decision, and I'm pleased for the people of Epping. As a council, we always said the Bell was not suitable for this purpose because it's in close proximity to five local schools, residential properties and to a residential care home. It just wasn't the right location.
The Home Office Minister Dan Jarvis says the government is now looking at contingency options for those told to leave the Bell Hotel. The Conservatives say families are paying for economic mismanagement after inflation rose by more than expected last month. Official figures show the rate at which prices are rising went up to 3.8% in July. The Chancellor has admitted there's more work to do, but says measures are being taken to stabilise public finances. A member of the Irish rap group Kneecap has arrived at court in London to face a terror charge. Liam O'Hanney is accused of flying a flag in support of the proscribed group Hezbollah at a gig in November. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is at Westminster Magistrates Court.
A band has started singing Irish songs here, and there have been chants of Free Mo Cara, the stage name for Liam O'Hanney, ahead of his next appearance here at Westminster Magistrates Court. So big was the crowd during his first court appearance that this time the police have had to put restrictions in place on where the group can protest. They are here to show their support, with the Irish rap singer denying the allegations against him. Fraser Knight, LBC, at Westminster Magistrates.
NATO leaders will hold a virtual summit later to discuss security arrangements for Ukraine in the event of a peace deal with Russia. President Trump has said Volodymyr Zelensky and Vladimir Putin are still prepared to meet, despite no official confirmation. And the civil service is to develop a new apprenticeship scheme in an effort to employ more people from working-class backgrounds into government. LBC understands 50 roles will be available in Birmingham and Manchester to try and move jobs outside of London and the South East. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 13 at 91.75. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells for most today, cloudy across central and eastern areas, feeling cooler, highs of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Summer's best bits. Relaxing on beaches. Catching up with friends and family. And here's another summer highlight. Right now with SEAT Summer Savings, you get £500 off the SEAT range on top of existing offers. Just order and take delivery by the 30th of September. SEAT Summer Savings. Now on.
T's and C's and exclusions apply. UK retail customers 18 plus. Excludes SEAT Ibiza. New stock vehicles only, subject to availability. Saving including VAT applied to on the road price.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Time is just approaching 10:04. Very good morning to you. Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien all this week on LBC. And another day and another horrible dilemma, devilish dilemma for this government. In fact, two, both of which posing the fundamental political problems for this administration going into the next political year, which of course is just about to get started with the party conference season already looming into view. And that is of course both the economy, which we're going to discuss about, yet more bad figures for the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, inflation climbing to a 19-month high today, but also of course this question around small boats and migration. Small boats, of course, irregular migration, illegal migration, asylum seeking, whatever you want to call it, a relatively small part of the overall migration picture, 30,000-40,000 or so, when you compare that to the overall net migration numbers, which have been anywhere between 500,000 and nearly 1 million over the past few years. It is only a small component, but it is the most emotionally redolent component. There can be no doubt about that, because the pictures that we've seen for some years now of people clambering into small boats across the channel, dangerous, deadly, lethal. I've reported many times myself from northern France. I've spoken to many, many of the people there. I've spoken to some of the smugglers who operate there. It projects the impression of a government which is not in control of its borders. Ironically enough, if they were simply invited in without any of the pictures being broadcast, the actual image of control would be stronger and better. But the idea and pictures that it conveys of complete lack of control and lawlessness has become a massively emotional touchstone issue in British politics. We've seen that. And of course, yesterday, with the ruling in the High Court, that one of the principal remedies to arrest this problem, or at least to put it into abeyance for any particular period, which is the use of asylum hotels, because you've got to put these people somewhere. We don't want to get into a situation as we have in some European countries, as indeed there is in northern France. As I said, I've been there many times. Any of you who've been there as well will recognise this. People living in squalor, people living in tents, no sanitation, no sewage, just simply living in the woods and forests of the areas around Dunkirk and Calais and the Grand South camps out there. It's horrendous. It's awful. The local residents in northern France hate it. People just wandering around along the motorway with trolleys full of their clothes, kids, possessions, all of it. Old people, young people, everyone in between alike, families. It's a terrible, horrible sight. We don't want that. We don't want to be the sort of country with those sorts of people just roaming around the streets in that way, not least because of the potential dangers to public safety it might convey. So what have the government been forced to do? Not just this government, but the government before it. Well, they have very few options because we have very limited social housing accommodation available. Most councils are already extremely hard-pressed. So how did we end up? We ended up with the use of asylum hotels. No one wanted it. No one wants them around them. No government wants to pay for it. It's an enormous cost, but it's been the least bad option for some years. It may now no longer be, or we may be on the path to at least it not being the sort of option that it has been in the past. Keir Starmer's asylum plans basically plunged into turmoil after that High Court ruling yesterday, blocking people seeking refuge from being housed in that Essex hotel. Epping Forest District Council granted an interim injunction on Tuesday to stop asylum seekers from being placed at the Bell Hotel on the basis of a relatively obscure bit of legislation from 1987, on a basis essentially of planning law. A reminder, there were about 200 hotels housing 30,000 asylum seekers at the end of March. Insiders at the Home Office have admitted to various newspapers reporting today that the department has been left reeling by the ruling. The department is obliged, of course, to house those asylum seekers until their cases are assessed. Reacting to the judgment, the Border Security Minister Angela Eagle has said, "We will carefully consider this judgment. As this matter remains subject to ongoing legal proceedings, it would be inappropriate to comment further at this stage." Of course, this hotel, you will be aware, has been at the centre of violent far-right protests since an asylum seeker was charged with sexually assaulting a 14-year-old girl. Those charges have been denied, and the person involved is due to stand trial later this month. The second man who was staying at the site has separately been charged, a Syrian national, with 7 offences. Several men have been charged over alleged disorder outside the hotel. And of course, the point of this, the reason this is germane, is not just because of what's happened in Epping, but of course, there is every possibility that this could now, this legal action could be expanded to other asylum hotels, which could leave the government with a really difficult, invidious, horrendous situation. What do you do with these people? No one would want to start here. In an ideal world, these people would have been processed long ago and either allowed to stay in the United Kingdom or they would have been sent back to wherever they came from. As we know, the Home Office asylum system has been poor.